I was like, okay. So I got to get her a little practice in, you know? So
yeah, get, like, do it on like the bad talent. So when the good talent comes like, on.
And I knew that you were going to say that. But like, you're big too. You're in distribution now. That's awesome.
I finally, it's taken so many years. It's one of those overnight sensations that I've been plugging away at for 5 years.
Isn't that hilarious?
No, like, that's always how it goes, you know, man. I wasn't gray when this started, and now there's so much gray underneath here.
I wasn't either till I had kids.
It sped it up. Let me tell you, like, my knees turned 40 the second my daughter was born. I was like, oh, I didn't know it was going to go that fast. And then when my son was born, the gray hair started popping up, and, you know, heartburn happens.
Kids, right?
Yep, two.
Just two. Okay.
Just two. Yes, dude.
I have two. I have a 24-year-old daughter and then a 10-year-old.
Hi.
That's a big gap. I have questions, but I don't know if there's time.
And we had just got into comic books. Like, she discovered them in December. And our birthdays are 2 days apart. So hers is the 19th. Mine's 21st of December. And we always just, you know, I take those days off and we go somewhere, do stuff. And we were in a comic shop and she saw a Harley comic. She's like, what is this? I'm like, it's a comic book. She's like, can I get one? I'm like, get 10.
So I got two. Yeah.
So she got a couple of them. And then I think every week since we've bought a stack.
The journey was crazy to collect them all, but we finally did. We finally did.
We did. We got all of the 2021 series. So.
Yeah.
That's so awesome that you get to do it together. Like, that's my favorite thing. My kids are just now getting to the age where they like stuff that I'm not reading. Like, my son collects Fantastic Four and reads every single Fantastic Four book that comes out. And he's like, do you have Fantastic Four? And I never really read it growing up. I was a Spider-Man kid. I'm like, but I'll get into it now. So we go every week. We get the Fantastic Four. My daughter has every Sailor Moon manga that's ever existed before. And, like, she loves that. I wasn't a big Sailor Moon kid. But they read so much more and doing it together. It's so rad having, like, a hobby that you can do with your dad, right? And I got, like, that's got to be, like, is it a dream come true? Or is it like, it's fine. He comes with me when I get my comic books.
No, it's, like, amazing. Like, yeah, like, I don't know how to drive, so he drives me.
Well, but once you do, he's out, right? Like, once you can drive yourself, he's gone.
No. Because he buys it for me. Oh, he buys it for me.
Yeah, dad's checkbook's still good.
That's totally fair. Oh, my God. As long as those checks clear, Dad, you get to come with me. We get to bomb.
Yeah, I think her sister feels that way still today. So
dang.
She's 24, so.
At least, like, as long as you can pay for them, that's, you know that going in. Like, I don't know many people who have kids going, dang, you got to pay for them still? Like, that's just, that's part of it. And when they like cool stuff, like, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever my kids are into, I'm going to support. But the fact that they like comic books, and I know comics, and they don't think it's lame. Like, I used to have a lame job. They didn't care when I wrote about car parts. Now that I write comic books, they're like, oh, this dad's got a cool job. This is awesome. You know, like, the fact that you can share that with them is really cool.
That's
I always worry, you know?
100% accurate. Annika and I didn't have that same connection until she got closer to 6 or 7. You know, then she started becoming a daddy's girl. She was always a mama's girl. But now she's more, I mean, she's still has her mama time, but it's a lot more daddy time now too. Mm-hmm. So, which is good.
Finding anything to bond with their kids is awesome. I'm always surprised when they ask me about work, because to me, I have the coolest job in the world, but to kids, it's still, you know, it's dad's job. Like, how much do they really care? And they got to table with me for the first time a few weeks ago. There was a local convention and they came with me and they're like, Dad, you have fans. This is so cool. That girl wanted your autograph. And I'm like, listen, it's just as weird for me. Like, that's like, you know, that's the coolest thing ever. But they got to see it in action and they're signing books and they're telling people about my book. They're like being little salespeople walking around. I'm going to bring them to Morris City Comic Con next month because I'm like, best sales I've ever had. So, like, it's so cool being able to do it together. I wish they could read more of my stuff. A lot of my stuff's for a mature audience. I do have a few kid books. Some of my first books were for kids, and I'm getting more into that. But they do have, like, their own comic book shelf, and then there's dad stuff, because we can't read that. And, you know, like, they separate it, you know. Yeah,
how
they'll
old
get
are the
there.
Kids?
My daughter just turned 9, and my son just turned 8. So, they're close to being
they're
able
getting
to.
There.
Yeah. There's
like, I told you, we... I let her read Harley and you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, so how old are you, Annika? Like,
I'm 10.
Yeah, so you're, it's like right there on the cusp. Like,
she's right there on the edge.
Yeah.
My thing is, if it she's read so much more this year, and I mean, technically I have
oh
too.
Oh my God. oh my God, know, not that like, story.
She, you know, I mean, her reading's improved so much and she now enjoys reading. You know, she's reading all these comics now. It's like, I will never stop buying you comics if you're going to read them, you know, yeah. Like anything to get these kids to
read. I don't read as many comics as graphic novels, though, mm-hmm. because I usually read them at school. And, like, I don't want to bring comics to school because, like, they could get, like, bent in my backpack, and I don't want that.
Yeah, yeah, the floppy copies, as we call them, like, the singles, they get, like, messed up so easily. But the graphic novels, yeah. those travel well. And, yeah. like, my kids love graphic novels. That's, like, their main thing. My son's getting into the single copies now. My daughter, every single graphic novel, she just got Sisters, which is, like, the sequel to Smile and part of that series, the Raina Telgemeier stuff. And, her teachers came to me last year because they weren't allowed to check out graphic novel. They have an amazing comic book section at their library and they weren't allowed to check them out. And my daughter has the highest reading level out of the entire school. And she's in fourth grade now, but she was in third grade at the time. And they were like, how do you do this? How do you make this happen? I'm like, well, I let my kid read comic books and you don't let any of the kids read comic books. So now they can check out comic books because my daughter was
that's
like,
awesome.
That's why I read books. Like, this is how I got it to work. But like it's still kind of a backwards thinking at a lot of public schools where they're like, well, the comic books, those are just, you know, dudes in tights beating each other up. They can't read that.
I'm waiting for that phone call or the note from the teacher when, you know, she's have some Harley Quinn you know, graphic novel out. And I'm like, I'm waiting for that day. Like, I'm like, she's reading. Her test scores have improved.
Like, sorry, I'm not reading. Stopping.
Right. Exactly. And, like, you still are reading. And if you can understand the material and you have an awesome dad that you can ask questions to.
Yeah.
Those are things that, like, I try not to stop my kids from reading anything because it only makes my job harder because I have to answer those hard questions. It makes right. their life easier. Anything that yep. I can answer that they're curious about, it's probably something that they should learn about eventually. Right.
Like, exactly.
So, why limit them? So soon I'll hand them all of my gratuitous graphic novels that everyone dies and everything between happens.
I need to get something of yours. That's one thing I realized today. I was like, I have nothing of his to read to like look at. Like to you know, sounds like just watching every one of your TikTok videos.
Just trying to get, like, there's a glimpse here. What does it say in that panel? I can piece it together.
I knew, like, normally I asked for that, and I don't know. It just totally slipped my mind, I guess. And when we scheduled, because we only scheduled this a few days ago.
Just a few days ago, right. Like, either I'm awesome enough that you just wanted to talk to me.
That's right.
Or I'm boring enough that you're like, I don't need to read his stuff.
No, I think it's the first, obviously. And I, like, you had one of my favorite videos I've ever seen this week. So like
which
the one where
that?
You're talking about, I think it was your three steps of making comics or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was it? I reposted it. Let me look.
I don't, you got to post every day. So like, there's so many of those that go through.
Yeah, there's so much stuff,
but I will happily, I can send you PDF copies of most of it. I'll send your email. I'll send you the lot of everything I got.
That's what it was. The XP one.
Oh,
and we had that whole back and forth conversation in the text,
in the comments. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The XP thing, it came about because breaking into any industry is hard. As you know, you have a cool job, right? Like working in sports is a dream come true for probably a lot of people that you talk to. And that was the thing with comics for me. I always wanted to be a writer and I had a pretty good job. I worked at an automotive company. I wrote about car parts. If you ever see anybody talking about, a thermal reaction or something like that. That's me going back and forth between legal because we can't say it explodes. So, you know, you're not allowed to say this battery will explode. So there's a thermal reaction that happens if you put a aquatic battery into a non-aquatic vehicle. Who would have guessed? That was my job, right? That was my job for a long time. And it was really boring. So I started writing comic books and broke in doing that, doing indie stuff. Most of what you hear from people at that small stage is no, or more likely nothing. They don't want you. They don't care about you. And that's not their fault. They have pros that they work with that bring their own audience, already have people that want to hear from them and have already been proven that they know what they're doing. Why would they take a chance on a new person? And so everything you do is begging for a job, doing it pro bono, doing it out of your own pocket, if nothing else, and for nobody except for yourself to build up that XP until you level up. So I try to make those videos because I get guys in my comments all the time. Everybody always asks, well, how do I do it? Can I write a thing for you? I have this awesome sample story. How do I get it to Marvel? They'll hire me, right? And it just happened yesterday, a guy right. that I'm working with. And I'm like, no, no one cares. And it sucks to hear, but it's true. No one cares about you until you make them care. So you got to put out your own book. You got to find friends who are doing it themselves too, and do it long enough until you can get someone's attention. And that's how I got the Invader book deal, is just not taking no for an answer long enough to get someone's attention.
It's just, and it goes, what I love about that video you did, and I mentioned it in the comments, but it goes for anything. It goes for this podcast, you know, when, you know, like I said, we've rewatched, you know, the first few minutes of episode one,
mm-hmm.
and just how far you go, and, you know, just the next, you just take the next step. You just keep going. You know, I'm a huge Gary Vee fan. I know we were joking about that earlier, you know, and he's all about that kind of motivation of, you know, it's so hard. I got so much to do. Well, just focus on the next part, right? Yep. Just break
one
it
foot
down
in front of the other, you know?
Exactly. And before you know it, you got 40, you know, this, you know, I don't even know, 42, 43 episodes. No, here we are. That's what I love about that. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna mark the clip here because we've already got a lot of good stuff, but we haven't actually done like the introduction.
Yeah.
Hey, comic creators, artists, writers, world builders, this is your call to action. Here at Talking Comics, we love diving into the stories behind the story. Whether you're just starting out or you've been in the game for years, we want to hear your journey, your creative process, and what fuels your imagination. So, ready to talk comics with us? Message us or hit the link in our bio and be a guest on Talking Comics.
Oh, we should probably do that.
I just kind of jumped in.
I'm like, I know they have, I've listened to the show. I'm like, I know you have an intro, but yeah. Like, maybe you add that afterwards. I don't know.
Nor, you know, just kind of jumped in. Well, and we got on like 15 minutes early because I did, I was just trying to get some film footage of, I launched episode 40 today, but episode 40 is just an announcement of my comic book that I wrote.
Yay!
And yeah, so it's awesome. We'll get to that. I do have a whole 2-page script here, but and it's not. It's just a bunch of stuff on there for, you know, to remind me to ask stuff. But normally, how I start these things is, you know, welcome to Talking Comics. I've got T.S. Luther with us today. And Annika joined us today, which is weird, but she wants to learn. So we're giving her the shot to learn today. And but before we dive into your comics, even though we already have and I'll play it later, give us a little intro of yourself and background.
Hi, my name's T.S. and I write comics, but I didn't always. I used to have a crappy day job, and then I got on TikTok to plug my books that I started doing in my spare time, and it really took off. So now I'm an indie comic book writer, and I've had the chance to work for every indie you've ever heard of, and I'm working for publishers like Mr. Fish Comics, Professional Entropy, and now my new book, Invader Comics, is putting out. That's called The Digger with my buddy Sam Gudelin, and tell your shops about it right now because it's up for order for the next 2 months, so you got to get in there. But that's me. I do the silly TikTok dances and I write comics.
Silly TikTok dances. She's impressed with the dances. I didn't see those videos today.
I don't do a ton of them. Like, they used to be the thing, and then the comic book stuff took off, so I didn't have to dance as much.
Gotcha. So what you're saying is we have to start dancing until we get
right
bigger.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Every time there's a dance trend, at least do one, even if you look silly, and then you can grow from there. Yep.
Good thing I took dance classes.
No, you got to do worse. So pretend like you didn't take those dance classes, or just make him do it. Because if you look too good, then it doesn't work. You got to stand out. Yeah.
Yes.
I look ridiculous because I look like this. So when I do the dances, they're like, oh, that's funny. What else does this guy do? Oh, he writes comics. That makes sense because he can't dance.
Exactly. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yep.
Yes.
I hacked it.
You gave
that's
her too many
system.
Ideas. I'll never see the end of this.
I should put you in a Captain America shirt.
Oh, do it.
With jeans. Oh my God, that would be amazing.
She's referencing old episodes, which is hilarious. And even one of my buddies that actually watches and supports me, and he's like my, I call him my, he basically makes sure he keeps us in line. If I do something that like bad or, you know, isn't right, he'll be like, yeah, you should probably not say that. I'm like, oh, okay.
When he says something.
Yeah. So when he tells me to change something, I listen.
Yeah. 1,000%, man.
He's my, you know, reality person, I guess you'd say.
Reality person.
But him and I, we've been friends for, you know, 10 years or more. And we have this longstanding joke that I hate Captain America. And so he always like picks on me about that. And I had him on the podcast. And he did this whole like, we discussed a comic book that Captain America was like really being bad in. And I was like, see, he's bad. And it was the whole Volstagg
one
shot
yeah.
earlier this year. And he's like, well, I'm not going to pick sides. And then he takes off his hoodie. He's got a big Captain America shirt on. I'm like, whatever.
I have a Captain America shirt just off screen because I'm also a big Captain America fan. Kidding. So if we can.
I also have a Captain America shirt.
Yeah, like maybe we need to go match just so you can really feel how wrong you are, I think. You
know? Okay. All right. We'll just pause real quick. Go put your cat stuff on. It's more of like a, like, just. I liked Thor better, as you can probably tell by most, you know, some of the stuff.
They're not mutually exclusive. I also love Thor. You can love both.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I just didn't like the Captain movies as much as the Thor movies.
That's okay, because you have hundreds of years worth of comics now that you can go and read, you know? Like, it's just, and that's an exaggeration, but we're getting there. It's getting there. But
yeah, I got my first, like, Silver Age. I got the. My first Journey into Mystery. It's in rough shape.
Oh,
it's
nice.
109.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I got it for like $7.
Of course. Oh, that's the, like, my kids will pull out something. They pulled out, I have a House of Mystery, which was the first appearance of Swamp Thing.
Wow.
And they were so excited. They're like, Dad, this has got to be worth thousands. I'm like, that's worth like maybe $8. I've had that since I was 4. I'm pretty sure I scribbled in the back end of it. So I feel bad because they find these pieces. They're like, Dad, this is so cool. You have these old comics. Like, we gotta sell them. Like, comics aren't worth any money. That's the wrong reason to get into it. You gotta do it for the love, because no one wants your collection anymore. If we could time travel back to the 90s, when I bought all those comics, because I was a really dumb kid, we could make a lot of money selling them right away. Like, I have a shiny Onslaught back there that's got the foil cover. I think it cost me $100, and in 1999 money, that was a lot. Yeah, that was a mistake. I should have kept that $100. Would be doing me much better right now. That's at least another page in a comic book I could hire someone to do. But
exactly. So, yeah. So go into that. Do you do any of the artwork yourself?
I do variant covers now and again. I'm mostly a writer. That's how I got into it. But when you first get in, the odds of getting an artist to say yes to you, unless you're going to pay like so much money, are pretty slim. Partly because you're unknown. Partly because you're not really skilled at it yet. And another part is that they don't know you. So them taking a chance on you is pretty slim. So you should probably learn to draw at the outset. You can do your own books that way, and you can make a little bit of cash on the side if you get good enough. That's what I did for a long time, is doing variant covers for other indies and my own books. Now I'm half passable. I don't do interior art because it takes too long and I don't have the patience for it. But also I don't need to now because I can work with artists. But I did learn, and I would also recommend learning how to do all the things in a comic book, doing your own art, doing your lettering. If you're an artist or a letterer, learn how to write a little bit. Have a little bit of empathy for your teammates. Learn what they're doing so you know how to ask for things. Know how hard their job is. It does help. But I know how to do a little bit of everything in a comic book because it's kind of what you have to do to start out.
Right. I've got very fortunate because I decided to write a comic. I was inspired by all these conversations I've been having. I was inspired to write a comic, and I was going to do the whole thing myself, but I am a graphic designer person. I'm not an artist. Like, I can't draw on a piece of paper very well. I can do pretty good on a, you know, computer, you know, putting objects together, make it look cool. And I did. I did an alternate cover, variant cover for mine.
Yeah.
I'm going to do, you know, so I'm going to do a couple of them.
They sell Annika's well. It's like, oh, like written by the, or drawn by the writer. And they're like, oh, that's cool, you know?
Right. And yeah. But I got very lucky in, do you know Mike Elgier? Do you know him?
Not off the top of my head, not the name, but okay, I'm going to
he's Dork Art Comics. Dork Art
that I've heard of.
Yeah, so that's who it is. I got very lucky. I interviewed him several episodes ago, probably like episode 32, I think it was. And we just kind of hit it off, and we just kept talking like every day, like on Instagram, you know, Messenger or whatever. We just kept just talking, and, you know, we hit it off pretty well. And he heard about the comic through watching the episodes and stuff. And he sent me like a fan art of Panel Pete. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I was like, hey, because we had talked about in his episode that he liked getting other artists to do like alternate covers, you know, mm-hmm. or he'd meet another comic creator and they would do alternate covers for each other. Right. Yeah. It's just something fun to do. And I was like, I'll pay you. Would you be interested in doing a cover for me? Like an alternate cover. He's like, oh yeah. So he did it. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And I sent him the script just to read, and he came back and he sent me page one in pencil. And I'm like, dude, like, stop. Like, you know, he penciled page one, and I was like, dude, like, you're going to like commit yourself to this if you keep doing this. And it just, I'm like, all right, dude, I'm going to pay you to do this. And he's as passionate about it as I am, which is what I really wanted. You know, I think you had another video about that too.
Yeah.
Finding, you know, the creative team and what they're passionate about. Cause that's, you can't pay for that. You know, no. You can't. And, you know, I released a video earlier this morning, actually episode 40, it's all him and I met, and we showed off the covers and page one and all that. So it's super exciting. We built the Kickstarter. I'm not going to launch it until he's done, though. So it'll be like February. You know, we're going to have a finished product. I've got quotes from the printer. I've got everything done.
Everything's ready to go.
Everything's ready. Just once we get the artwork, it's ready to go. And I'm doing it regardless. So Kickstarter.
We are beyond excited to share the Chronicles of Panel Pete, a brand new comic coming in early 2026. Written by Talking Comics podcast host AJ Ryman and co-written and illustrated by Mike Elger, Dork Art Comics. Panel P is a heartfelt comic about courage, imagination, and the hero within. Sure, he may stir up a little mischief, but at the end of the day, he's the hero we all need. Expect variant covers, exclusive merch, and much more. Follow the links in our bio, hit that notify me on launch on Kickstarter, and join us on this adventure.
Not, like I told you, we're going to, our goal is end of May, we're going to that convention up there in Traverse City,
yeah,
Michigan.
Yeah,
I mean, so I've emailed the guy, because I know you and I were talking about that too. Yeah. As soon as I hear back, I will let you know what
please.
I find out.
Because like I'll be hitting that up for the first time next year. I'm doing Motor City Comic Con because it's that XP thing, right? Like building it up.
Right.
When I first started, I had pitched to publishers because I made this little one shot and I was like, oh my gosh, I think I can do this. I love this. I got to do this more. My wife said, so what's the plan? And I had all these stories. So I made a pitch packet with every artist that would say yes to me. So we would do 5 or 6, 7 pages sometimes, plus a cover, full script, and finish those sample pages. And then you write like the log line, a summary of it, who the team is, and you pitch those to publishers. That's how you do a submission for most publishers. And I did that like 10 times. I spent my life savings. I was still working for those automotive companies. I had a paycheck coming in, and I got mostly crickets. I got lucky. I was in the slush pile at a few publishers and they felt bad and they emailed me. They're like, some of these are really, really good and no one is going to say yes to you. And here's why. And they took the time out of their day to explain to me, like, it didn't matter how good my book was, even if they like the coolest thing that they've ever seen. I had never published a comic book that anyone bought before. And so what I needed to be doing was putting out my own indie books and then come back with these pitches. And that was the same thing. Once I started getting through all of that, publishers were interested in talking to me, and they finally wanted to hear those pitches that I had. And they said, where are you tabling? Which cons are you going to be at? We'll send somebody to talk to you. And I said, I've never been to a con. I'm not even as like a fan. I don't know what to do. So I called up the cons and I submitted table stuff. And they all said, no, you've never tabled before. We've never seen a picture of your table. You can't table with us. You got to go learn how to table. And so you go off on another side quest. So now I'm off. I'm doing farmers markets and library cons. And finally, I did enough small conventions. My buddy, Mr. Fish, took me to Tulip City, which is in Holland, Michigan. That's their big con over there. And I got to be one of the special guests because I was friends with him and I had done a few comics. And I took a picture of that table. Then Motor City Comic Con said that I could come. And it was a big thing because last year, Motor City Comic Con told me no. And a big publisher that I won't name here because I'm talking to them right now said, hey, we're coming to your booth. We want you to pitch us a book. And I had to tell them I didn't have a booth there. And I missed my big shot. That was my big chance to break into comics. And this year I have a different comic book deal and lots of publishers are going to talk to me at Motor City Comic Con. I have yeses.
Sweet.
So it's just like that stick with it thing. You're going to find people, but it's always that XP. And it's hard not to get discouraged when all those things fall apart as you go. But if you can handle that, and you know, I'm mid-30s, I have two kids. I've been everywhere between broke and less broke my entire life. So this is not new, right? Like if you can handle that, then you can handle the rejection that comes with the industry, you know?
100%.
I wish some of the younger people that do it didn't go, well, if Marvel's not going to hire me, it's not even worth doing. Because it is, right. You can get there. You just have to stick with there. It. Yeah.
You got to stick with it. And it's the same thing in my life. I mean, with 2009, I bought a house October 1st, 2009, November 13th, which happens to be a Friday the 13th in 2009. 6 weeks later, I lost my job. The business shut down. Right? Gone. Like, I made one house payment. We lost everything. This was before she was born. But I took that time. I got the opportunity to go back to school for 2 years, community college. And I just did it just to do something and met some really cool people. And I've always been entrepreneurial, right? So I've loved doing entrepreneurial stuff. So I was like, well, I'm getting a little income and I don't really have a commitment. School's easy when you're 28 versus 18, you know, school's so easy at 28. Like I couldn't believe how easy. I'm like, why did I drop out of this 10 years ago?
Why
like,
was this so hard for me?
Why was it so hard? And it was so easy. God, like I think back on it. I'm like, I made straight A's. It was like not even trying. Like it was so easy. For me. I mean, I'm sure there's people that, you know, it's harder for, but I took that time and I opened a little publishing store. I was publishing real like novels at that time.
Yeah, prose books.
I won't say real books, but I was publishing novels at that time because my wife was an author and I started like, oh, I can do this for other people. And so I started publishing for other people and I opened a little store doing the printing and publishing myself. And I turned that into like a game store / hobby shop. And I ended up running that for 7 years and I sold that and started doing like miniature game accessories and we would always go to the convention circuit, you know, game conventions and set up a booth and, you know, COVID happened and it kind of fell out because of COVID. But it's like, I think back, you know, 'cause that was 4 years ago now, the XP thing, like all of going through all of that has led to me doing this today, you know, 'cause this is really filling that entrepreneurial itch, you know, that I've been having the last couple of years. Like I got to get back into doing
something,
you know, something myself. And this is really doing this. And then if you had told me 3 months ago that I was going to write my own comic book, and now actually have an artist and actually have artwork to show, like it is so surreal. But I'm excited to get back into the convention circuit. And luckily, a lot of them that I've talked to are excited just because I have the podcast, right? And I can do like live shows from the events. And then the comic, it was weird for me though, because I've always gone to conventions to sell stuff, product. So I'm like, going to a convention as a podcast, I don't have anything to sell.
Yeah, you're just there,
you know. So, but I was trying to wrap my head around just being okay with that fact that, well, I'm there for exposure, and you know, a subscriber is a sale, right? And I was like, oh, okay, I'm good. And then this old comic came out. I was like, well, now I'll at least have a comic book to sell. So
you'll have something to hawk there. And it's right. a lot about networking. The reason why I
exactly.
go is because like every publisher and shop that I've tried to get my books into or talk to, they're always asking me like, yeah, let's talk at this con. So that's why I started going. The sales, honestly, is secondary.
Right, and exactly.
Now, because I work with publishers, the publishers paid for my tables at all these cons. So like Sweet. It's not coming out of my pocket, and they want me to go to pimp the book and tell people about the stuff.
That
so,
helps them too.
Exactly. So I get to go there to network. I sell a few books for them. I tell people about the stuff and advertise, and it's a good time. And every once in a while, I'm still really small, so it doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while I see a fan out in the wild, and that's always really, really cool and surreal when somebody already has the book and brings it up to you. When that happens with your book, you're gonna be so surprised because you're
right.
Like,
it's gonna be so happen. Weird for me.
Exactly. Where did you get this? Like, how did you get your hands?
Yeah.
On this?
Where'd you find this? Right. It was in the dollar box. So tell us about the book.
Okay, so The Digger specifically is what I have to. I'm contractually obligated to talk about this.
Okay, that's okay.
I have lots of books coming out, but this is the big one because it's finally in shops. This was. Similar to what I was talking about before with artists, I had found this amazing artist. His name was Sam Gudelin. I really wanted to work with him. He has this Genndy Tartakovsky, almost 90s Cartoon Network-like art style. And he works out of Russia and a few other places in Europe. And I had emailed him on a whim saying, hey, I really like your work. I'd love to pitch you something. He happened to have seen some of my stuff already, liked what I was doing, and said, yes, please pitch me stories. I came up with some of the best pitches I could, some of the best pitches that I had never pitched to any artist. And I sent them to him and he was like, these all suck. I don't want to draw any of these. Like, no, thank you. And I was heartbroken. It's okay. I'll take my toys. I'll go home. And he said, no. I still really want to work with you. Can you give me more pitches? And that you usually don't get that far. If they say no, that's it. And luckily he still liked the stuff I read. So I asked him the thing that I think that everyone should do when you first meet an artist, and that's, what do you want to draw? What can I do to make this our project? What are you excited about? And he came back and said Mesoamerica. He'd been reading a lot of pulp thrillers, a lot of those old adventure magazines like Doc Samson and like The Phantom and a bunch of old stuff. And he had been really into that, and he said, can you do something along those lines? I wrote three pitches that had more to do with that. I lied and said, oh, I already have stuff for that. Let me go get it together. I didn't. I went and made it up after I went home. And I came back to him, and one of those was The Digger, which is, what if Indiana Jones hunted Short Round? That's the entire pitch. If whatever you're picturing in your head, you're probably right. That's the entire idea.
I can't wait to read it.
I'm so excited.
I hope it pops up on League so I can... When's the official release date?
I don't know. I believe it's coming out early 2026 is what's going to be in shops. It's up for order in the Lunar Catalog starting October 1st. So that's probably when you'll see it pop up on League.
Yep.
This is my first book in distribution actually on there. So it might take a second for it to pop up there. I am on League of Comic Book Geeks right now for my other books.
Well, then I'm just going to go pull your name.
Yeah, go follow.
Yeah, you can do that. I love that.
I know, it's so cool. I didn't know it was a thing. I had never heard of the website.
I didn't either until about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, one of my fans was like, oh, you're legit. You have a League page. And I was like, I have no idea what this means. I'm so old.
Love League. It's so good.
I do now, too. It's so cool.
For $1.90 a month, it's, I mean, you know, they don't sponsor us. They should.
They should, yeah.
I'll still pay the $1.90 a month.
Yeah, they should, actually.
It's so worth it for the what it does. We have our whole collections.
Right, yeah. You can get everything that you need. And like you said, it keeps track of the collection. It helps with my kids because they're always like, well, which ones do we already have? They can never remember which ones. The amount I bought Lumberjanes.
That one.
Right, exactly. I bought Lumberjanes Volume 4. 6 times. I have 6 copies of Lumberjanes Volume 4 because the kids love that book and they always forget which one we have. So whenever they see it out in the wild, they just go buy it. And I'm like, we have this already. You're like, stop it. You're on Volume 7. Like,
we finally combined our collections. Well, they added the camera function.
Oh, that definitely
a couple
helps.
Months ago,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we went through and scanned all of our comics and in one account, because she had her own account, but not a paid account.
Yeah.
we'd go to these conventions or stores. She'd find a Harley comic. I'm like, do you have it? I don't know. I don't think so. And then we'd have three copies of it. And I'm like,
yeah.
All right. So we finally scanned every single copy of every book we got in this room. And now when we're at conventions, I just scan it. I'm like, oh, we already have that.
Love that so much. I got to get back to talking about the book, but I have to tell you a quick aside.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Side quest.
No, it's so perfect because so my son was really excited. We just moved and I moved all my long boxes and he had never seen them. And he was like, Dad, you didn't tell me you had such a big comic book collection out of the single copies. Because I keep my volumes up on the shelves. Right. I can get to those anytime. The trades are there. But the singles, they're in a box. And he was like, I'm so excited. This is all Spider-Man, this whole long box. And he opens it up and he discovers my secret shame. And that was before kids, I could afford to buy variant covers. And I bought every single one, every single week. Like we're talking hundreds, if not thousands of dollars every week on variant covers. And he goes, okay, so this is Spider-Man number 7, Dan Slott. Okay. Well, this is Spider-Man number 7. This is Spider-Man number 7. And it there's maybe 14 copies altogether in this entire long box. I just have all of these variants and like from signed like baby copies from Scotty Young to like all sorts of stuff in there, like stuff that I love. But he was so disappointed. He was like, I got to read for like 2 hours. Like that was it. Like that there was nothing in there. So like it's having those apps is extremely helpful. But I'm sorry.
Back to the book.
The book. This is going to happen every time. I'm a dad. I'm going to go off on the tangents. So what if Indiana Jones hunted Short Round, right? That's the pitch I came to him with. When you have an artist that just jives with like what you're doing, I sent him that pitch. And before he said yes, because he had already said no, I was like, oh, he hates these two. He came back with the first issue. Like almost fully penciled. He had figured out the title treatment. He had sent me like every single still from The Sorcerer. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but that was the main inspiration for the design of the main character. And he was like, he understood the entire vibe that I was going for. And he was so excited about the project. We said, hey, instead of you paying me or me paying you, what if we did this just together? Because neither one of us had broken into Western comics like that. What if we just made this whole issue and pitched it to everyone who will listen? And that's how I would recommend anyone want to do it. Like you can do sample pages, you can pitch those. Maybe your sample pages will be better than mine. Maybe you're more talented, more skilled, whatever. But having a full completed issue made it sell like that. The first place that we pitched it, they said yes to. And that's been that's the case awesome. For several of our books since then. And so having that finished book is where you got to go. I had pitched it on TikTok. I did that that like pilot season. I pitched a bunch of books that I was working on, mentioned The Digger. One of my fans who bought all of my stuff said, hey, I like the stuff that you have right now. This is way better. You should be pitching it to Invader Comics. And I had picked up a few Invader Comics before that. They did Josh Rubin's Darla. Josh Rubin is a Hollywood director. He is a comedian. And so I'm a big fan of him. So I had this book from Invader. And I was like, oh, I've heard of them. I don't know if they're going to want this book. They messaged in the comments that they liked the book. Like when they heard me say that, I don't know if they'd want it. They were like, we want it. Please pitch it to us.
Yeah, please
do it. Exactly. And I was like, oh, this is so exciting. And so I had pitched it to them. They bought it immediately and the rest is history. And so if you like Indiana Jones, if you like cat and mouse thrillers, this is the book for you. Like it's really exciting to get. It's only 4 issues, so you don't have to worry about it getting up to the 50s. They wouldn't give us 50 issues. They gave us 4. So you don't have to worry about it getting too high and being lost in the sauce. You can pick it up.
That's interesting. They dictated 4?
No, I mean, they would have give us like 12 issues, but I said it's a 4-issue miniseries. But I will say, though, like if you do pitch it somewhere else, like if you pitch like big publishers, even big guys right now don't get 50 issues unless it's selling gangbusters.
The most they might give you 12 and they could extend it or something like that.
Gotcha. And especially if you're
just
starting
like a TV
out,
series.
Exactly like that. Like if you've seen TV series getting shorter and shorter, and they can't take a chance on a new creator like that to do 25 issues. So if you're small like me, you're probably going to get 4 or 5. So if you can cater your scripts a little bit to that, you're going to get more yeses because they probably wouldn't have said yes to a 50 issue miniseries of the
Right.
Theater. But 4 issues, they were like, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Exactly. And there is a little bit more of an intellectual angle of The Digger. We really deconstruct the idea of it belongs in a museum. People who look like me and you for a long time, we were grave robbers. They were stealing stuff. Indiana Jones steals stuff. That's the thing. He puts it in a white museum, you know, like in America. Like, he didn't take it to the museum in that country. Correct. So we approach it a little bit from that angle. Our main character, he's just called the kid in the book. He is really who we're seeing this all through the lens of. And you have this guy who is a grave robber and he steals stuff. And he's not in it for the glory. He's in it because he's good at it. And he's kind of a bad guy. And it's the experience of this kid who's a guide who knows where these ruins are, going with this bad guy to steal some treasure and everything that happens from there. So if anything I said sounds cool, or if you just really like Sam's art because he's a masterful artist, you can go check it out. You don't even have to read the words. You can pick it up and just look at his pretty pictures. I won't be offended. So please go and tell your local comic book shop.
I'm going to go right now, and everybody else listening should go to League of Comic Geeks and pull just your name and just follow and pull anything that you put out.
I appreciate it, man.
So that's what should happen. So that way I don't have to keep remembering. If I just do that, it should just auto pull
it. Should just tell you exactly.
I'll keep up with it. Yeah, it'll show up on my pull list.
And listen, if you get on TikTok, you're going to see my ugly mug telling you about it for the next, 2 months. They're going to be up there.
I've got to get better at that. I mean, I post something every day, but it's usually just clips from episodes, you know.
But that's good, though.
It is. That's important. I think so.
Yeah. As you get closer with your book, you can talk about that a little bit more, posting the characters.
I want to put one out tonight, probably, about the, episode 40 is announcing. Mm-hmm. We've got the pre-launch page done and all that stuff. So notify me on launch, go click that and, all that fun stuff. It is hopefully just to get the word out a little bit. I don't care. It's so bad because I want to sell it, but I don't need it to sell, right?
Right.
I guess that's a good place to be, right?
That's an excellent place to be, because then you're not hurt if it doesn't do well because you're doing it for you.
I'm doing it anyway. It doesn't matter if the Kickstarter. I think I put $500. I don't even know why I put $500.
That's a good vanity printing, right? I know that you're probably going to print more copies than that. You've done the math. Yeah. You can see the gains there, the per unit cost. We don't need to bore people, but you know the math. If you wanted to just do a vanity press, $500 will cover that. You can get a book out. I tell people if they've never put out a Kickstarter, a Zoop, a crowdfunder, anything like that, put it at $500. You can get $500. There's enough of a comic book audience on all those crowdfunding sites. There's enough people who scroll through indie comic book TikTok who will go, I'll try it. I'll give it a shot. I want to help support you because you seem cool.
That's a lot of what it is, right? Yeah. I've backed people that I've interviewed live on the, wait, you got what? Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. All right, I'll back it.
I got $10. I can throw it on there. To get you to 500, to get you to your goal, I can do that.
And that was this one guy I interviewed. He was so close. He was within three, his goal was $3,000, but, it was within a couple $100. I'm here, I'll throw what I can at it and let's go. And he ended up funding 2 days later. So that was awesome.
That happens a lot. When it comes to my indie stuff, I had a buddy of mine. He came to me. He had a little bit of investment money and he said, "Hey, I've been looking at getting into publishing and I love what you've been doing with comic books. If I started a comic book publisher, would you license a few of your books to me?" And so that's what I did. That's Professional Entropy. That's the other publisher I work with. That's my buddy John and myself, because part of the deal that we made is he had most of the startup capital, but I brought the books. So I own a piece of that company. And that's Indie Comic Books. It's all formed off of our D&D games, basically, is how it went.
Love that.
Right? It's one of my favorite things about the pitch. But then a couple of my whales who backed everything I did at the highest tier, they saved one of my Kickstarters one time. I was not going to make it. And they said, I got $500. I can tell you $500. I'm like, that's crazy. And they did it. They're fans. You got to learn to just say yes. You're already begging for money on the internet. You might as well take the pity of your fans, right? And so they came on board too and joined up and are a part of Professional Entropy. And that's how it goes, is you have these people who are really excited about the book and they might not be the biggest comic book fan, but they just want to be on the ground floor with some people. So if you can take a chance, if you want to make a comic book, there are people out there that'll probably fund it. You're not going to make $50,000, you're not going to be, selling 400,000 copies of your book. But if you just really want this, it's a dream that's attainable. I think that people forget that because you see Marvel and you go, well, I can't do that. But it doesn't have to be Marvel.
It doesn't have to be Marvel.
No. Like you can
And that's another thing with going to these events. It's like I'll give you the comic at cost if you just subscribe to the podcast. Yeah. You know? So
and like sometimes you have to. If you want to get your comic book in shops, because like the financials of doing your own indie comic book, if you're not printing 10,000 copies of your book, odds are you're not going to be able to get it down to a level where a shop can afford to buy your book from you. Even on consignment, they're like, well, no one's going to buy this $10 indie book. So if you can get cost down low enough to where...
I'm very fortunate with my printer.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing a $7 cover price.
Nice. That's a good, that's at least a fair price.
I feel like, I pay $7, for even indie stuff, I'll pay seven, $6, $7. I did not want to break seven. Like if I couldn't sell it for, if it had to be more than seven, I don't know what I would have done, but I was not about to, cause some of these guys are like $10, $12 for, a car. I'm like,
and it's because they're paying unit price. They're paying $3, $4, $5 because they can only afford to print 100.
Right.
And that really sucks. It helps. Like, I'm in my 30s. I've worked in logistics. I know math. I know how to contact investors. It helps that I'm a white dude in the Midwest. Like, I can talk to people with authority to a certain level.
Right.
Like, it is the sad fact of the world, right? So when I go to a publisher and I go, hey, listen, I funded this entire book myself. You haven't had to put a dime in. Help me at least get the unit price down to $1, $1.20. And I can sell these for $5, $6 and I can put it in shops and we'll break even. Because most people in the indie space, their books have to be $10, $12. Otherwise, they'll never be able to make another one. And that really stinks. I wish it wasn't that way. It's just,
I'm not sure what the comic book or the comic store's expectation is. I know when I did, the hobby side, the board games, card games, we were, you were only getting 40% to 50%. If you got 50% off retail, like MSRP, to buy it for your store, that was good. Most of the time, you were only getting like 40% off. So a $100 board game, I'm paying $60 for.
Exactly.
So, I definitely wanted to be able to get it to where I could at least go half off and still at least break even,
Comic books are on the buyback method for a lot of distributors back when Diamond was still a thing, at least.
Right.
But they need at least 55-60% markup. So if you can't get your book down to like $2, most comic book shops are not going to carry it. Because if you were Spider-Man and they had to take a hit to get Spider-Man on the shelf, they'll do that because Spider-Man will sell. Now, Tokyo Fire, my book from Professional Entropy, go check it out. We have a Kickstarter pre-launch page up too.
Hey, send me the link.
I will. I totally will. We'll cross.
I'll put all the links. I'll put all the links in the bio and all this stuff of this episode too.
So that was like my indie darling. That's what kind of got me through everything. And I couldn't get that in the shops because I couldn't get the price low enough to get them to be able to put it at $5, $6 because no one's going to buy this $10 indie book that they've never heard of. And the shop isn't going to buy it from me for $5 because they know it's not going to sell. So it wasn't until I could get it below like sub $2 that they would take it. So full transparency, if you buy a T.S. Luther book that's not from Invader Comics, if you buy one from Professional Entropy or some of the other smaller publishers I work with, if you buy it from a shop, I'm probably breaking even. I'm probably taking a little bit of a wash. But please still do it because that helps me get into more shops, which helps me buy bigger prints next time. Like, it's all worth it. But that's the kind of stuff that I talk to these young dudes who are trying to get into comic books don't understand. They're like, well, I want to make money off my book. And it's like, you kind of have to do it for the love. You might eventually level up to the point where you're getting paid.
Right.
But you gotta swim through a lot of crap to get there first, man. Like, you gotta be willing to dig through the sewers to get that Andy Dufresne moment. Like,
love that reference.
I'm old, right? Like, like how many times have we seen that on like TNT?
I love that movie.
I do too. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, fun fact. Do you know that movie bombed at the box office?
Yeah, I do.
That's the craziest fact ever. It's like one of the greatest classic movies ever.
So classic,
and bombed at the theater.
and
on release.
And that's a lot of Stephen King adaptations, yeah. Right? Like, people are like, oh, what is this? And then later on, they're like, this is the coolest movie I've ever seen, and I love it.
Can't wait to see The Long Walk.
I haven't been able to make it. See, I've been doing too many things. And my wife was like, wasn't there a movie you wanted to see? I'm like, stop telling me about it. I'm upset. I didn't get a chance to go see it.
One book I read as a kid was that book. And the movie, now it's a movie. So this will be the first time, other than now that I've read comics some, you know, now I read comics like
all the time, 3 or 4
a day. But this will be like the one movie where I'm going to be like, yeah, the book was better. No, because I hate people that do that. I'm like, why would I waste all that time reading the book if there's a 2-hour movie I can just go watch?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Unless it's got pictures in it.
Exactly. Like, so you're a big comic book reader, Annika. Now, like, now that you do it, now you've read, like, you're that person, right? You've read these books. When you see Harley Quinn showing up in the movies now, do you prefer the movie or do you prefer the comic books that you follow?
Well, it depends. Like,
such a comic book answer. It depends. Right? I don't know. I like issue 4, but I like Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
And you can like both. That's the
right. There's
beautiful
no limit
part about
to it.
The comic yeah, stuff, like, right? You can like both. Even the movies and books, and they're both independent things.
Right.
You know? Yeah,
it gives it like a different like description of it. Mm-hmm. Like the book can be like the same story but explain it in a different way. But like, and then the movie would be like same thing, different way. Like, so you would get two opinions with like two birds with one stone.
Right, like, right. You can like both, right? Like the different mediums serve different things with it. That's my son in Superman. He just really discovered his love of Superman. We went and seen Superman in theaters. He loved it. And he's like, Dad, I love it, but I love it for different reasons. Like, there are different things that I like out of this versus that, which is really cool that you can. I loved it. But like, it's really cool that we can have both. And I think some people forget that a little bit. You get into a little bit of the, well, I like the comics, so I'm not going to go see that movie. It's different. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is that you get to have both. Now, I have more of a selfish question for you, Annika. How do I get a young reader to read my comic books? What's the thing that you look for on the shelf that you go, that's what I want? How do I sell to people your age? If I had to sell you a comic book, what does it need to have? And don't say Harley Quinn, because I'll cry, because they won't let me write Harley Quinn. I have no control over that.
Fair enough, you don't. Unless you get DC, right?
It's an Ivy. Yeah.
Won't make the Gotham City Sirens. No, I'm just kidding.
You talk to next week and you say T.S. Luther. Keep him on your radar. You hook me up, Annika, okay? You do me this favor. What do I got to do? How many comic books do I have to send you to get you to drop my name to
Oh, man. That's
One.
You got it. I'm going to send you a whole box of comics. I got stickers. You want stickers? I got a yo-yo. You want a yo-yo?
I love stickers. This is
her practice episode for now he's pitching her on the steps.
Dang.
Listen, you got to be a mover and shaker.
Cut this part.
Like, don't you dare cut
this. When does that episode come out? Hold on.
Annika, here, like, real quick, while he's gone. So I have kids, right? And my kids cannot eat unless you convince to give me a gig. All right, I got to feed my children. They're 8 and 9. They're just a little bit younger than you. I got to do this.
Jesus. I cannot deal with that much responsibility.
All right, forget it. I'll just send you the comic books. Go back to the part where you liked me.
One of each.
You got it, Chief. You got it. I'm going to send you a box.
Yeah. So this is coming out on the 8th, and I'm not interviewing till like the 22nd.
So there's time. Oh. There's time. We can make this happen if we work together as a community.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, so back to the
Annika's
original question.
Annika's going to be our ticket to, you know, the stardom here.
Yay.
All because she loves Harley Quinn.
I appreciate you so much, kid. Unless you fail me, and then listen, I'll never forget.
I'll try my best.
You're going to kill it. So back to the question. What do I have to do to sell comics to someone like you?
Yeah.
Okay, so first...
Not have a dog. No, I'm
I fixed it. It's okay.
Okay. I thought that was Shelby.
Yeah, me too.
It was my dog. His name is Grayson, named after Dick Grayson, obviously.
Perfect.
Okay. So like my age group. Okay, so first thing, I look for the covers.
Okay.
You got to have a good cover artist, not like plain and boring. Like, it needs to be like pop and like colorful, but like in the middle between boring and like bad. Not bad. Like,
I know
boring,
what you mean. It's got to pop. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So a good cover, that's number one. What's number two?
And then like on the inside, like the actual comic, duh. Like, it needs to kick off. Like, it needs to have, like, a good kickoff. Not, like, a boring start. Like, this went blah, 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 and then it kicks off? Nah, it gotta kick off.
Action scene, and then you can go back into the boring, like, oh, this is how I got there.
No. Like, you know, have you ever watched the Deadpool movies?
Of course.
Okay, so, like.
The what? Who?
Deadpool. The Deadpool movies? Okay, you know how it, like, has, like, this fighting? This fighting, and then like it like cuts and say, this is how I got here, and then it goes all the way back, like rewinds and right. Blah blah blah.
We gotta drop you in media res. I got you. So Annika, What if I told you I have two rules for every single comic book that I put out? Number one, the cover has to be the coolest thing you've ever seen. And number two, it has to start, if not in the first page, by the second page, it needs to have a double page splash. It needs to have as much art as possible.
Yes.
To show off. Like, you don't need 45 panels on page two. You need one.
Exactly.
One, right? Like, to show off what you're working with.
Exactly.
So, if I send you all these books and you go, this is exactly what I'm looking for in books, can you repeat that?
Yes. I mean, maybe. I'll try.
Oh my God.
I'll try.
No, but like, so jokes aside, that really is my rule because I studied comic books in the 90s and I came from like the Image School of Comics. And these are guys like Robert Kirkman, Eric Larson, Todd McFarlane. If you're going a little bit further, obviously Robert Kirkman came later, Rob Liefeld. And these guys came from Marvel, right? So they were these big names, but they started their own books. They were started over. They couldn't write Spider-Man anymore. So they come up with their own characters. And even though they were these big names and people were really excited, you still had to hook readers. How do you hook readers if they don't know Spider-Man's going to show up in this book?
Yeah.
Why would they care? So their rules were, especially Eric Larson on Savage Dragon, was hit him with as much art as possible. Todd McFarlane would draw the coolest Spawn pose possible on page two. So you're already hooked in the book. And then they'd hit you eventually with the wall.
Like
text,
the
right?
detail. The right. detail.
Right. She's also a huge I Hate Fairyland.
I love I Hate Fairyland.
That's my favorite book. I've based my entire career off Scotty Young, the writer and artist of I Hate Fairyland.
Right?
I love Scotty Young.
Oh my
God. But
now we're best friends. Now you have to pitch me to because we bonded.
Yes.
We bought the Deadpool. We bought the Scotty Young cover of the Deadpool Batman.
Stephanie Phillips and Scotty Young are my two favorite writers.
Man, hands down, they're so good, right?
I know.
Middle West is one of my favorite books. Have you read Middle West by Scotty Young?
No.
Get this girl Middle West, AJ. What are you doing?
I'm a horrible...
You're buying her Harley Quinn. You're failing as a father. You buy her a copy of Middle West, and number one...
Middle West.
It's so good, but she's going to love you every more because it's about a bad dad. And she's going to go, well, my dad's not that bad, so...
Okay.
Hands down, like, I'm killing it because I'm not as bad as him. So even if you suck, which I'm sure you don't, you seem like a cool dad. But
he is.
The bar is on the floor in this book for bad dads, so it will make you look great. There's a few swear words in that, and as a dad, Annika, I got a warrant against it. But your dad has told me that he swears like a sailor offline, so...
He does.
Okay, so then I don't have to feel too guilty.
Nah.
But I admitted to him earlier that I did.
So you do, though.
I take the Gary Vee approach.
Exactly. No comment.
That's the same thing with my kids. But it's drawn by Jorge Corona, who is an amazing artist. He did Batgirls for DC, if you've ever read that one. If you like Harley Quinn, I also highly recommend Batgirls. The art on that is amazing. Writing as well. But go check out those two books. But Scotty Young... is a huge hero of mine. I've modeled half of my career off of him. That box that I told you about, all those variant covers, I would say 60 to 75% of it are just the baby covers that Scotty Young did. Every single Spider-Man, X-Men book, it's all of his artwork. Love that dude.
We've been finding a bunch of those and just picking them up.
They're so
cool,
man.
Like, I love his artwork.
It's so good.
And I just...
Go ahead.
I just finished the number 7 of the I Hate Barryland books. They have been so good so far.
What happens in issue 7? I jog my memory because I've read all of them.
Okay. Have you read number 8?
No, I've read all of them. You go ahead.
Okay. So she's talking about book 7. She has the...
The new run or the new run? Oh, I haven't read the new run
yet.
She has the volumes.
Volume one. She has 1 through 7, then she has the single issues where 8 picks up.
I got you. Yeah. So that's the new book. So you have all basically book 1 or somewhere along the lines there.
Kind of, yeah.
What's the last thing that you remember happening? Help me out.
Oh. God.
Put on the spot. It ain't easy, is it?
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to break you.
No. Cut this part because I got to think.
You are already a pro. Cut this part? Oh my gosh. We'll fix it in post. Like, you're already a good host.
Oh,
she doesn't need to practice.
You should have seen our episode last week.
Oh, God.
She's like, I need a pen. So I toss the pen, like, on the couch, next to her. She has, the couch over there. Just, I toss it, so I don't hit my kid in the face on camera, right? So I toss it over there. And then she just goes, she's like, all right, Dad, I'm going to do this.
And you cut it together so it looks like she caught it?
She's like, do this. And she's like, just edit to where I catch it. So, of course, what did Dad do?
Edit to where I catch it.
It's a good dad right there. That is solid. Yes. That is so cool.
Yes. Best dad I've ever had. Because it's the only dad I've ever had.
It's not explaining after the words that you have a good dad who tells dad jokes that you feel the need to say it's because he's the only dad I
Yeah.
It's funny because people that I interview that go back and watch some of the episodes of her and I, they're like, man, she gives it to you just as much. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I live with her.
I love this feat, though. Like, when my son, we play a lot of, Fortnite together, and he talks so much smack. And people, I'm out in public, and you can see the dads who don't have fun with their kids, because they're like, you let your son talk to you like that? And I'm like, oh, you should have heard the stuff I said to him yesterday. your kid doesn't feel comfortable enough to tell you these things? Like, oh, okay. Right. You guys don't have fun. I get it. I'm sorry. Me and my son get along. I didn't know that you didn't get along with your kid.
So while she's thinking about it, go into the writing process. You're a writer, really, right? So go into your process. Like, what do you need? What do you have to have? Like, what's your...
The only thing you have to have if you want to be a writer is pen and paper. I firmly believe that.
Do you have any rituals or I have to use this pen or this?
And that's what I mean. No, I don't I firmly believe the only thing you need is a pen and paper. So as long as I can get my idea out there, I'm golden. Now, that being said, I do use many things, right? I have a big bulletin board over here. It's a cork board that if I have a really complicated story that I have a lot of scenes for, I'll post it up here so I can move them around and figure out the best version of it. I use OneNote. Do you do that, Annika?
What?
I saw you doing one of these.
No.
Yes, sir. The lady up front, she has a question?
No. I got my idea.
Okay.
Not the idea, but the last thing that happened that I remember. Okay.
So yeah. Pause the writing question.
Pause the writing question.
Annika,
you hit us
back
with
to
that.
You.
Okay. Okay. So she throws... So... this actually didn't happen in book 7. It happened in another book. Book 6. It's where a bunch of Gerts came. And one Gert, most of them died except for two. And the door was open and they had the key. And they were talking, the king and the Gert was talking, and the other Gert was blah 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 blah, rambling her mouth. And then she just hands him throws the key at her and then shoves her out the door, and then she realized that now she can't go home because they don't have another key. So
I love that book so much.
You can imagine how that turned out. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. It's basically Alice in Wonderland like remade.
Exactly.
To be like better in a way, but like
I'm a giant fan.
Yeah, yeah, it's based off of the original, but like, you know, like redone.
It's just exactly just written better. It's just like, what if we yes. what if we made these classics funny? I love that.
Right.
Okay, so writing process, right? I have my cork board.
Back to writing.
I start with bullet points because if you're gonna be a writer, you can have a million outlines, you can detail every single paragraph, you can have your giant plan, but at the end of the day, you just need beginning, middle, and end. You need three bullet points. And once you have those, if you know where your story starts, you know what happens in the middle, and you know how it ends, you have your story. You just need to fill in the blanks in between. And so when people have a hard time writing a comic book script or any script in general, that's always what I recommend is if you have those three bullet points, you have your story. You just need to fill in those blanks. So that's how I start everything. It's the same way I run a D&D campaign, or I just got hired to do a magazine article last week. I hadn't written an article in a decade. And so that's how I wrote down my magazine article is like, here are my three bullet points. And I started filling it in. And so that's what I do on every single issue. When I write for other people, which now is a really cool privilege that I get to do when I get hired by another indie, usually I'm writing on their existing series. Not often do I get to do like a fun one shot. A perfect example, we're talking about Alice in Wonderland. I write a series for Mr. Fish Comics called Alice Lost in Wonderland. And it's about an adult Alice who gets stuck in Wonderland, and she's been there for a long time, very much like Gert. And she's a time-traveling bounty hunter now in Wonderland. And she
goes to all,
you would dig it. I'll send you some copies. And you got it, man. As part again, if I'm going to bribe me to talk to seven... I gotta send you all the good stuff.
You're making it really hard for me to edit this out, aren't you?
I'll take some money.
I'm gonna have to beep it out, and then after I interview, then re-upload the video with an unbeep.
Only re-upload it if you actually talk to her about it.
Well.
Exactly. Yeah. If she's like, oh, yeah. Well. You, but it never goes live. I don't even know you two. I can't believe you would do that. but it's a very funny series, and it's about this bounty hunter who happens to be Alice, and she's in the Wonderland area, and lots of shenanigans ensue. But it is that leveling up process. But when I write for Mr. Fish, I send him an outline, and I go, these are your toys. This is my idea for it. These are the bullet points I want to hit. Where am I wrong? Where are the details that I need to know? So that's partly where that bulletin board comes into play with my cork board. I put up the scenes and I'll put questions for the person who has the rights to it up in purple. And I send them a picture and I go answer these things in purple. I wrote a issue for the new Luminaries, Lucky 33. Have you guys heard of them?
They're not.
So they're another indie company on TikTok. They do comic books. Highly recommend them. They're awesome. Annika, you would love them. They're a lot of fun. AJ, you would get a lot of nostalgia from reading their stuff because you're old like me. And sure. Like if you say so, maybe I just dye my beard better than you do.
I'm in my 40s. So.
Right, oh, okay. All right. So
he's old.
Low 40s though.
Exactly. You just wait till we're in our 50s, then you'll really think that we're old. So like the new Luminaries, go check them out. But I've had the chance to write for them and they're very intricate. They really care about their lore. They keep track of their time travel stuff. So when I sent them all these questions, these were questions that they didn't know how to answer. They didn't know these details yet. So it forced them to come up with everything. So when I write my stuff, I do the same thing for myself. And I answer a lot of the dumb questions that no one else cares about. And I fill in the details. So if I ever get the chance to write more, if a publisher ever says, hey, do you have a spinoff for this? I have those details in there. But it all starts with those bullet points. And it just depends on how much you fill it in. Some of my first gigs in comic books, some of those artists that took a chance to do those pitch packets on me, I got those jobs or I got those artists to work with me because I was so insanely detailed with my Bibles for these books. Because they would go, listen, you said it's a mech, but we need to know how it propels itself. Like, what's the propulsion method? Does it have jets? Is it nuclear powered? And I go, oh, well, listen here. If you turn to page 36, it explains how the jet engine moves, and this is how it's powered, and it came from this meteorite or whatever. And they're like, oh, okay, you do have an answer. I didn't actually care. It was a test to see if you knew what you were talking about.
That's
And I did, so they decided to work with me. And that's been the thing every single time. One time I had an artist agree. They're like, I want to do this book. This is awesome. I can't believe you already have this Bible. This is great. I'm going to draw all this stuff. It's going to be perfect. But you pitched me like four other projects. Do you have one of these for all of those projects? And I said, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, when it comes to all the comic book stuff, one of the reasons why I'm starting to find success is I didn't give up all of that stuff. But when opportunities came up, I was ready. And so my writing process is just never stop. Every single script that I have, there's an issue 4, 5, 6, 7, even if issue 1 is only where we're at. If I can't sleep at night, I go and write comic books. I got a few minutes before I'm waiting for this interview to happen because I was ready too early and I clicked on the link at 5:30 and I said, maybe I should hold off. They're probably not ready yet. I wrote a few pages. And that's my writing process, is I just keep going. Eventually I'll burn out and I won't be able to write ever again. And my fingers will break and bleed. But until then, I just keep going, man. And partly it's because it's just, this is the coolest job I've ever had. This is awesome. When I wrote about car parts, I didn't write crap. It took me a long time to do one paragraph that would pop up on Amazon to say, hey, if you want to buy brake parts, buy these brake parts. It took me forever to come up with a thermal event or whatever it was. But when it comes to coming up with the next issue of The Digger or Tokyo Fire or Alice Lost in Wonderland or any of the other books that I've written, it's like playing with my old toys when I was a kid. It's just action figures. And the fact that some people let me play with their toys now, I put so much care into it because I just never want that chance to slip away. They let me play with their toys. I'm going to treat them nicely. So I have the bulletin board and I have the OneNote page with links to different articles, their issues. And I have little notes in the margins that I ask them about. So my process is insanity, if I actually answered your question. If you just want to go a little bit crazy, like, do you remember Seven? You ever see that movie? Annika, don't watch Seven. You're too young.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's
too scary. When they're in the serial killer's apartment and it's got all the writings all over the wall, that's why I have a blurry background.
That seems amazing.
Listen, it's worked for me so far in writing.
Indiana Jones has that too.
Yeah.
In Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Exactly.
Which is that reference.
Oh my God. That's much better. Much easier to do. Again, The Digger, Indiana Jones coded all over the place. But that's the kind of thing. So I get a lot of extra little details and stuff. I care a lot about the comic book process. I stare at my scripts way too long, solving all of the little problems. Like, I might not change the story. The dialogue might be dialed in. I might not change anything like that. But I go, hey, Annika's never read one of my stories before. I don't have a good enough reveal on page 2. Even pages are page flips in comic books. If you've ever written a comic book script, page 1 is on the right. Even page is a page flip. So page 2 needs, you need to be driven from the bottom panel of page 1 to flip the page. So I care a lot about page flips and the different ways that you can control the pacing of your book. And I highly recommend people look into that. I was working with a friend once who also wrote comic books. He doesn't do it so much now. And we were on a live stream and some newer people were like, well, what do you do? How should I improve my pacing in my book? And I explained this thing that I just explained to you about page flips. And the other guy said, well, I don't worry about that at all. And like, I read Marvel comics and they don't even do that every time. And that's why sometimes my books speak to people and they don't to others, and they see like a boring book and then they pick up mine, and it's because I really care about those little details, because I'm not Marvel. I don't have Spider-Man in my book, so
Marvel can get away with those filler issues.
Exactly, because you care what Red Hulk is doing. Exactly, like you're gonna read the Red Hulk comic no matter what because you want to see Red Hulk punch somebody.
Right.
I don't have Red Hulk. I don't have Spider-Man. I don't have Harley Quinn. How do I get Annika to read the next page? So I gotta use
even in
everything.
The like. Good.
No, that's that's it.
I read the whole Thor God of Thunder series, you know, from the early, you know, mid 2012, 2015.
Yeah, it's only one of the best series ever written. Go on.
Amazing. Well, did you read the Godzilla versus Thor that came out a few weeks ago?
Yes, dude.
Best comic I've ever read in my life.
It
best
was
comic.
So good. It was
only
so fun.
Because I read, like, you know, the God of Thunder series.
Exactly, yeah.
But even that 25 issue run has like 3 filler issues. And it's like, what are we doing? But I'm still reading it.
And that's something that you don't see in any comics, like that consistency. Like, I love picking up a graphic novel. Like, you talk about like Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, or even the like the Mighty Thor run, like Jason Aaron's run, like so consistent when it comes to art, at least in story arcs. You don't get to do that often from Marvel or DC, not because they don't want to, but because they have to put out 50 some books every month. It's hard to get an artist to be able to do all those issues, and you have to do fill-ins. And with an indie book, like, I can't afford to hire a second artist if I wanted to. So you're going to get that consistency in my book that you might not see somewhere else, because I have no choice in the matter. That's just how it's going to be. I noticed I've gotten really, really dark over here. I'm sorry. I didn't hook up my additional lighting because the sun has gone down on my end. I've talked so long that the sun has gone
the
down.
Sun
I'm
went
so
down.
Sorry. The sun's getting real low, big guy.
No, the sun just got tired. The sun got tired, yeah.
As long as we're not still on and the sun comes up, and we'll be okay.
It yeah. really depends on yeah. how much I can talk you into this thing, because if it takes all night, like I used to be a salesman, I can do this, you know?
Me too.
I got school tomorrow.
Yeah, she's got school.
So. Yeah, but that's okay. You have a really cool way to call in now. Like you have a great reason. You didn't get any sleep last night because you were tormented by a comic book creator.
It is for work. It is for work purposes.
Exactly. This is
is for an educational reason.
Yeah, Monica, this is the beginning of your internship. You have made it finally.
Exactly.
Both my kids have got, so my oldest daughter, she lived with me around this age of going through all the gaming stuff and going to those conventions and being that salesman at the show.
Right.
Like you were talking about earlier.
And now
I'm excited for Annika to get that opportunity.
It's a good one to have, because even if you don't end up going into something like comic books, the thing that my wife always tells me, and the positive part that I look at it, because I quit a pretty good paying job to do comic books, which I will not recommend. If you're going to make comic books, keep the day job. It's important. Even if you make it to the big leagues, they don't pay a lot of money. So keep the day job. But I didn't, because I'm dumb. That's why I write science fiction and not science fact. I quit my day job. Big mistake. And there's a lot less money coming into my household because I quit that and I do comic books now. But the thing that it did for my kids is it showed them that a job in the arts, going after your dream job, was possible. And that's something that I didn't have growing up. I didn't know you could do something like comic books. I didn't know anybody who didn't work at Walmart as a mechanic or cutting down trees. Those are the three jobs that you could have where I grew up in the middle of the woods. So I didn't know that you could write comic books and actually succeed at something like that. My kids know that now. They write their own comic books. They draw their own stuff. And they know that's possible. So, Annika, like, you have that chance. You see your dad doing all these awesome things. You don't have to go and work at an automotive company writing about car parts unless you want to. Unless that's your dream job, right? It could be. Car parts are fun. According to some of my old coworkers, they loved it.
It's not. I do like old cars, though. Like, I like cars a lot.
Sure.
Like, they're interesting. Like, I love NASCAR. Like, we went to a race one time. It was loud.
It was loud.
Wow. Those lights really do work.
Oh.
Jeez.
You didn't like being lit up like the sun?
The sun got tired.
I've gone back and forth. I have like this light, but I didn't like the way it made us look. It looked too fake.
It looks really fake. Like you see like the ring lights, it looks like I'm in an old like Bad Boy video, you know? Like like I'm in the like it's all about the Benjamins.
Exactly.
You look like the sun, like wait.
That's the goal, right? Like you need to know that I'm popular. Did you not figure it out?
I don't think we touched on this yet, but what got you originally into writing? Like, what was the first thing you wrote? What made you start that?
So the real answer is I lied a lot as a child. Like, right? Like, as a kid, I was full
Don't take that advice.
Don't take that advice. It was bad.
Don't.
But, like, I lied a lot as a kid, and I couldn't figure out why, and it was because the real world was kind of boring for me. And that's really what it came down to is I was poor growing up. I didn't have a lot of cool things going on. I wasn't into a lot of extracurricular activities. And when I was 16, I was living in a van by myself, and I didn't have a lot going for me. And I started writing in a notebook as a little bit of like a therapeutic thing, just trying to survive, right? And then me and a few of my buddies in high school, without supervision, we started renting a house together. It was like the house from Fight Club. And when I couldn't sleep at night, I started writing stories there. And so I had this notebook that I was filling up with stories. And then one day I was working at a call center years later, me and my wife, she's pregnant with one of my first kids. And she was asking me what I was doing. So I'm just at this call center. No one's calling. It's the middle of the night. And I was telling her I was writing these stories, and I had never told her any of these stories. So I started relaying these stories to her, and she liked them. I thought maybe it's just because she thought I was pretty. Turned to find out I'm not very pretty, so it was just the stories. And I've been doing it ever since. I never looked back, and I started writing these comic books. And when people come to me and they like it and they're not my wife, they don't just think I'm pretty, and they're impressed by it, and they're entertained, and they feel something from my stories, that's a thing. That's like addicting. You know, I don't do drugs. I don't do anything addicting. Right. But that feeling, I was chasing it. So I wrote a little story called Growing Up, which was an anthology comic book, and I self-published it. And nobody bought it. But the people who did read it, who weren't my friends, who weren't my family, they really dug it, even though it's like the artwork was a little bit amateurish and I hadn't learned the form quite yet. People were entertained. And that's how I got my start, because once I did that, once I saw that people liked it, I needed something like that. It was something I didn't know that I needed, something I didn't know that I wanted more than anything, which is scary. As a dad, it's like your job is put food on the table. If you're doing that, you're killing it, right?
Right.
And that's how I always thought. And it was scary because I never wanted something for myself like that. If I never met my wife, I'd still be living in that house with my buddies on a bedroll that somebody died on that I got for really cheap. And I played Magic the Gathering 6 times a week. And I ate 50 chicken wings every Wednesday because it was 50-cent wing night at Wing Street. And that was my entire life. It was the only thing I cared about. Even though I had those stories, it's fine. That was for somebody else. The second I saw that people wanted my stories, needed them, enjoyed them the same way that I did writing them, I couldn't ever go back. And so once I got started, I've just been doing it ever since. And luckily, you know, some people who might not be in their right mind started giving me money for my comic books and paying me to hire artists so I can keep making these things. And that's how you get things like Hellion and Bash, Tokyo Fire, and now Invader giving me money for The Digger. That's cool. That's the journey there.
It's definitely a new era for me to write something, because I'm not a writer. Like,
you are now. You can't say it anymore, man.
I can't say that now. Yeah, I've wrote a whole script.
Now yeah. Who's cool of it?
Right?
I've wrote several comics.
Look at that.
So yeah, she's working on it too.
That's awesome.
But I had a 6-hour plane ride about 3 weeks ago, and I just sat there on the plane and I did my outline, you know, like just wrote 1 through 20 on the script, what I wanted to happen on each page, and then just, all right, page 1, this is what I want to happen. All right. And I just, you know, I used the plane ride there and back and pretty much finished it, you know, had to tweak it a little bit. But then I printed it one day and gave it to Annika and my wife and just ran and hid.
Yeah, in the room next to us.
Well, yeah, but I just still, I couldn't, you know.
You can't watch them. You can't watch them read it. Yeah, because what if they don't laugh at the right spot?
Right.
What if they don't gasp when you need them to gasp?
And I was like so scared.
It's so terrifying, man.
Yeah.
But then they come back and they say they like it. Would you say, Annika?
But Panel Pete is a savage, though. He is.
So they liked it. So I feel pretty good. I mean, I'm not saying it's like, you know, the best comic in the world, but it's mine and I did it and I have an artist drawing it. And that was, I'm sure you had a very similar thing. Seeing page 1 for the first time, to even in pencil, and it's what I wrote, and it's like the perfect, like it's perfectly what I thought. Is like unreal.
Like the perfect representation.
Yeah.
Like
it came out of your brain and it's on that page now. And that's how you pictured it. And if not, it might be better than how you pictured it. Like this is,
it's actually better, but
that's a feeling that it never goes away. Robert Kirkman talks about that a lot. Like that's like Robert Kirkman made Walking Dead money, right? He does not need to write another comic book for the rest of his life. And he still does it. And he does it a lot. And he does it very well. And we're very lucky, at least in my opinion, that we still get Robert Kirkman books, even though he has all that Walking Dead money. I love his stuff. And he talks about getting that page back is so addicting that he will always do it, no matter how rich he gets. And I completely agree. And I'm in the exact same boat. Again, the selfishness of having to do comic books. I don't know if I couldn't afford it, if I could handle that anymore, if I couldn't do this anymore, if it got taken away from me for some reason. Because when I got those pages back all those years ago now for that anthology, and like I saw it was magic. I couldn't believe it. This is what you get to do this all the time. You write these comic books every month. Like, this can be someone's job. Like, I had to pursue it no matter what. And I doubled down on that because I used to do podcasting. I grew up in pop punk bands and ska bands, like in the 90s, you know, in the 1900s, Annika. There was a time before the 2000s, and trumpets were everywhere. We all skateboarded and we had Sobeys. I don't know if they still have those. Probably not, but we drank so many Sobeys.
What is that? What is a Sobeys?
It hurt me just a little bit hearing that. It was just a drink. It was just a cool kid drink in a glass bottle that you could park a car on top of and it would never break. We were all just Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles out there in the 90s.
That's cool.
Right.
I was so young then.
My knees worked back then. You know, like the
sky. I didn't have kids in the 90s.
No.
That was crazy.
No, I didn't have responsibilities in the 90s. But that's okay.
Yep.
Sorry, I got lost in the sauce there. I got the nostalgic wave hit me.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. You're fine. This has been amazing. Yes. We've had great conversation. I never wanted to end.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, dudes. I appreciate this so much. And thank you so much, Annika, for hooking me up and getting my, all my stuff to
Yeah.
You're the best.
I will definitely let know, maybe not on the podcast, but before or after, I will mention your name.
After, I don't need to ruin my representation.
Wow.
I don't know.
Representation.
You think I'm going to ruin your reputation?
No.
But for real, though, I am like, aside, I will send you a box of all my comic books. AJ, I will email you a big PDF of everything I got, and then give me like a P.O. box or something that I can send stuff to in that email, and I'll hook you guys up. I'll send you one of everything that I have.
You don't have to do all that. But.
Well, yes, I do. If I'm going to bribe a kid, you got to bribe a kid.
Yeah, you got...
You got stickers?
You got 20 days.
Like Ron Swanson always says, you don't half-ass two things, you whole-ass one thing. If I'm going to bribe a kid, I'm going to do it right.
You're going to do it right.
Yeah,
exactly. That could be this, like, UPS truck backing up to down the driveway.
I'm going to give her the good stickers out the ramp that I have over here. These are the ones that I sell for money. I keep them in I have my little, this is my Band-Aid box that I keep stickers in because I'm an adult. But I'll definitely hook you up. Thank you so much for chatting with me. It's been a blast.
We're not done. You can't run. Yet.
Oh, I thought you were closing out. I was trying to wrap it up. I'm so sorry.
I'm trying. No, you're fine. I was just trying to try to move to another little section. Like,
yeah,
inspiration.
Don't let me hog it. If you have
got
questions,
a little bit
hit
more.
Me.
I was going to say, like, we've talked a lot about like the writing process and like what got you into it and. A little, I think we touched a little bit on like inspiring others, especially like other creators, you know, but like what do you want people to feel like when they read your stuff? Like what?
I've always been a Steven Spielberg guy. When I write a script, I put everything in it. I want you to laugh. I want you to cry. I want you to be at the edge of your seat. I want you to be a little bit afraid to turn the page. I want you to feel everything in there. So that's what I want. When someone picks up one of my scripts, I write horror, I write comedy, I write action, I write thrillers, I write a little bit of everything. Obviously, if you pick up The Digger, I want you to be a little bit afraid. I want you to not know what's going to happen to this kid. I want you to feel a little bit bad for these people who is getting this stuff stolen. I want you to feel a little bit bad for the main antagonist, even though he looks really scary on the cover. You to be afraid for these people. I want you to be afraid of these people. I want you to feel those things. But I want to do a little bit of all of it, because when I watch Jaws, I laugh, I cry, I'm at the edge of my seat. And that's the goal. When you pick up a T.S. Luther book, I don't want you to go, oh, he always does X, he always does Y. I want you to feel a little bit of everything, because those are the best stories. That's why I love Jaws. I don't love Jaws just because there's one of the best monologues that's ever been put to the page. I love it because it does everything. And also it has one of the best monologues that's ever been put to the
page. And it has my favorite song that I sing in the car and drive Armica crazy.
Is it because we're old? Is that what it is? Like the song's not good anymore?
It's on repeat.
Because it's a good song.
Plus, okay, plus, I'm sorry, Dad, if I hurt your feelings.
At least I got an apology.
Sing. He cannot sing. He cannot sing.
I used to hate my voice on camera, or being on camera and voice on podcast, but now I actually enjoy it. It's so much fun.
Well, again, like when you make it to your 40s, when you get to an age where like you have kids and you're doing stuff and people are responding well to the stuff you do,
right,
you realize that some of the hate that you have for yourself is unwarranted. Like, you don't need to take it all the way to like get the big head and I'm the coolest person ever, but you, which I do, like, I'm awesome. Everyone knows that. But
yeah, like, you don't believe me? Just ask me.
Just ask me. I will tell you how awesome I am. Let me list my credentials. But you do start to realize that voice in your head that says, hey, I shouldn't be doing this. It's not there. It's not necessary. It's someone who doesn't like you, and it's repeating it in your head that you heard a long time ago, and you don't need it. So you need to just enjoy yourself. Enjoy the singing of the songs, even if you're bad at it. I'm sorry, AJ. Maybe you're great. Maybe she just is tone deaf and she can't tell. But she has heard Taylor Swift. So, you know, like, she knows Taylor Swift is good. So maybe she has a good barometer. I don't know. No, that's it. What's the one? If you had to pick one artist, who would it be?
Okay.
I keep putting you on the spot. This is my bad.
There's two.
Okay, give me both of them.
Okay. I like Sabrina Carpenter.
Sabrina Carpenter's awesome.
And TX2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who? What was the second one?
TX2.
TX2. Okay.
You're not supposed to ask. You just got to act like you know who it is, and then later on you Google it, AJ. Come on.
Right. Don't Google
move.
It. I'm
rookie
writing
move.
It down.
No, God, please don't.
You're supposed
now?
To go, oh, yeah, of course, I know who that is. Yeah, love them.
This is going to be one of those times, like, it's probably the, like, non-kid-friendly
totally,
thing ever.
Totally, 1,000%.
And it's all over this podcast, and I'll forget to Google it later, and then somebody will hit me in the comments, why do you let your kid
do this? I can't
believe
you let your kid listen to that. Carpenter's good. I'm a big Chapel Roan fan. I love pop music. I'm a big Chapel Roan fan right now. Sabrina Carpenter is awesome. But again, in the 90s, I had the best pop music. You know, I had Britney Spears. I had Christina Aguilera. I had every single boy band you can think of. And that music has come back full circle. So I'm just living my best life.
We have Nirvana. I get into it. That's what we had.
Nirvana is amazing.
Nirvana is like amazing.
I love Nirvana.
Perfect. You know what's sad, though? Nirvana, you know what plays in the classic rock channels now?
Nirvana.
We're 1,000. And that I was listening to the oldies station. They played Aerosmith. I was like, okay, we can get that's fine. Aerosmith still had hits into the 90s, but that's okay, whatever. They're on the oldies station. And then they played Blink-182 and Nirvana. And then the one that hit me the most, because this was the newest one to me, you know, when I was younger, was Bowling for Soup. And I was like, Bowling for Soup came out in the 2000s. They're like, yeah, that was 25 years ago. More gray hairs popped out of my head. I felt like my back, I hunched over and I was carrying my back like this. One of my first gigs was playing Bowling for Soup covers in bands, because I played in bands and I was a singer.
Right.
And that was always the one, because that was the cool band at the time. So we played a lot of Bowling for Soup songs. I'm like, oh, and now I'm classic rock. I've made it. It's gone full circle. I'm an old man. I get it now.
Yeah, we're old. It's fine. We'll get through it. So I have a few more just fun questions.
Yeah, man. Hit me.
I want to give you just the opportunity, if there's anything that we haven't talked about that you need, like, you know, I know you needed to talk about.
Right.
You know,
thank
which
real
is
hard.
Fine, which I want that, right?
Right.
But
totally.
The last thing I want is to hop off here and be like, oh, crap, I wish I would have said this, you know, or talk about. So if there's anything you want to talk about, this is your time.
I have three projects to plug on top of the Digger.
Awesome.
Please go to your local comic book shops, ask them for the Digger from T.S. Luther and Sam Goodlin, from Invader Comic Books. It's in the Lunar catalog. If the person behind the counter goes, I've never heard of Invader, where is it? It's in the Lunar catalog for October and November. You can go ask them there. I am a part owner of a publishing company. We're still pretty indie. We're working on getting distribution, but we have a store up. It's called Professional Entropy. And I know that's hard to say, so just look up T.S. Luther. I have links on my website. You can find everything I do. They published two of my series called Hellion and Bash, which is a superhero comic that's basically what if Batman had abused Robin and none of the superheroes stepped up because they're afraid of Batman. So the villains have to step up, save this kid, and they all go on the run from the entire superhero community. And it's this found family book about the people, the gray area between superheroes and the people who are actually saving kids. And so if anything like that sounds fun, I have two issues of that at Professional Entropy. And then my original series that I pitched way, way long ago on Zoop, it was called Tokyo Fire. Me and Sky Hawkins, with my co-creator and artist on that, we did an issue of it. It was awesome, and it got me and Sky lots of other jobs, so we never went back to it. Well, Professional Entropy has funded us to do an entire volume of it. So starting in 2026, we're doing issues one as a reprint. There's a pre-launch page up on Kickstarter right now. And then we're doing issue two and issue three and a one-shot and a graphic novel. So it's coming out and people are really excited about it. And by people, I mean my next-door neighbor who I told about it this morning.
Right.
On his lawn. He seemed really excited as he waved and like backed up slowly. So people are talking about it on the streets. So. And then finally, I write a series called Alice Lost in Wonderland that I told you about for Mr. Fish Comics. Issue four is about to hit Kickstarter. You can get issues one through three at gomrfish.com. So that's everything. There's a million other things, but those are the big ones, right?
Yeah, I got to talk. I got to get Mr. Fish on one day. I know you guys did it with Kevin the other day. I saw.
Yeah, man. Like
that was awesome.
Mr. Fish,
I did
loves...
Kevin a few episodes ago.
Did you? Oh, he was so nice. And I've worked with a lot of people that work for him, like Dennis Knight and a bunch of other people.
Okay.
Such a cool community. But Mr. Fish loves to do anything but the stuff that he needs to get done, like the pages that he owes me.
Perfect.
So you can definitely get him on a podcast. He would probably love to be on a podcast instead of finishing any of the projects that we're contracted to do. So you could probably have him on tonight, even though he has work to do.
It won't be tonight. I got to get her home eventually to go to bed. But, yeah. You know, we got another hour.
I actually sleep.
What?
I didn't sleep last night. I was working on my Kickstarter page, pre-launch page,
because
it got approved finally.
And then you go,
so I was
okay,
trying
now
to edit
time.
The video and trying to tweak it. And yeah, and then I got up, you know, went to bed super late, got up super early and finished editing the video and launched the video and all that. Now I got to get some kind of something.
At some point, like I always say, is sleep is for the weak and the well-adjusted. And if you want to make art, you can be neither. So,
right.
Like, yeah,
Gary V says you have to audit your 7 to midnight if you want to do anything fun in life. You got to just work 7 to midnight every night on your passion.
Listen, so. if no one's going to pay you to do it, that's the time that you have. I get a lot of people who ask, you're like, well, I don't have time because I have to have a part-time job. And it's like, okay, well, then you're probably never going to get it done. You're probably never going to do it because I also have to have a part-time job. I'm also a dad. If you see these people and you think that they get to do it just because they have free time, sometimes you're right. Sometimes they have a rich uncle who's going to pay for it all. Usually those are people who are willing to do it from 7 to midnight. Those are people who are going
right.
Instead of, I'm going to play Fortnite with my kid until he goes to bed. And instead of playing the game I want to play or reading a book, I'm going to go and write. I'm going to go and do the passion project instead of going to Six Flags on Saturday or going golfing on Sunday. I'm going to go work on my passion. And those are the people that eventually make it. Most of, at least in comics, most of how you're going to get ahead is attrition. If you outlast the competition, I hate seeing competition like we're all against each other or something. We're not.
Yeah.
We're all friends, right?
We're like, all for each other, helping each other.
Exactly. The rising tide raises all the ships. The sad part is that there's only so many gigs to go around, though. And if you want to be the person to get that gig, you just have to outlast a lot of people who are going to give up. And so when people see me getting the Invader gig and they go, how did you do that? How did you finally make it to a publisher? We were making books at the same time. It's because they stopped and I did. And that's the thing that I tell people the most. If you want to make comic books, you have to go make comic books. And eventually someone will then pay you to make a comic book. And that's the only way I know how to do it. If I was friends with anybody in the industry and I could get an in and they say, well, my buddy TS, he does this, so let him write Spider-Man, I would take it. But I don't know anybody to do that. And I don't know many people who do. In the absence of nepotism, you just have to outlast most people.
It's your XP. You got to do the
indie
do the stuff, and it leads eventually to, you know, what you want to do. Andy Frisella says something similar to that. You know, it's like if you start a project today, like the podcast, you're competing against 100 people that start today. You know, but 3 months from now, you're competing against 50 people. 3 months after that, it's 20 people. You know, a year later, it's 10 people. You know, you just have to outlast the,
and
you know, keep
that's
going.
Exactly what it is. Like, I did a video a while back because somebody had asked me, they were like, how did you end up getting this other one? Because I get paychecks for comic books now. And they're like, well, how do you do that? Like, that does, like that's impossible. Everybody I've asked to pay me said no. Most of the opportunities I get now are just because people know my name because I've been around long enough. So when they go, ah, we could hire somebody for this. Who do we know that we can afford? Because that's the other thing is I'm cheap. So they go, well, I've seen that guy on TikTok. I'm TS and I write comics, that guy. And they message me and I get hired for the gig because I've just been around longer. And I tell people, and I beg, I get on TikTok and I go, hey, if you have a job, the first thing I did, I turned in the last script for The Digger like 2 days ago. The first thing I did when I sent it off to Sam to draw issue 4 is I went on to Blue Sky and I said, hey, I just turned in issue 4 of The Digger for Invader Comics. Who has something for me to write? Like, that's, you just have to beg and keep at it. And you got to eat your ego. I cry a little bit inside every time I have to ask somebody for something because I was taught that that's bad and wrong. And, but if you want to make it, you have to. I've never been handed, no one's ever sought me out for a good gig. I've been sought out for jobs, but I've never been sought out for a good gig in comic books.
Right.
It's always me going, hey, you know,
that's interesting. I like that. So like, give us an example of one that they've reached out to you to write. Like, this is like their IP. They want you to be a writer on.
I have two. Really,
is that like Mr. Fisk's?
Yeah. And I say there hasn't been good ones because Mr. Fish is a great example. Because Mr. Fish, I did editing for. I had sent him a script a while back because he was the big guy on TikTok. He was the guy you needed to know. He was a big fish in a small pond. And I reached out and I was like, hey, would you give this script a read and tell me what you think of it? I don't know many professionals. I would love to know your thoughts because it's being drawn right now. And he liked the script, asked me if I would edit something for him because I always responded fast. I started editing for him. He asked for help on Alice Lost in Wonderland. I said, listen, you're doing this a little bit backwards. Maybe you should do it like this. And he said, hey, maybe you should just write this. And he asked me to do that. And that's how it happens often. I was talking to my friend Goblin Grimm. He's done work on the Hell's Bells series, and he's got his own anthology he's about to put out. And he reached out to me because he knows I love writing horror stuff, and I don't get the chance often. And he goes, hey, I'm looking for writers. You're the first guy that I considered. Do you want to write this series? And so I wrote a one-shot for him. That's the kind of thing that happens. It's because they know my name and I get asked to do things. There's lots of other options I can list, but they're not all out yet. So there's just, I'd just be saying names that no one knows about,
no
you know?
One knows.
Exactly. No, but like that's usually how it happens. It's usually through the TikTok community. My email is public. So every once in a while I get people asking about that. And you got to have a lot of irons in the fire because a lot of projects fall through for myriad reasons, right? Like artists leave the project, creators lose the rights to IP, they decide they cannot pay, you know, the economy is bad. So as it gets worse, things that were available before aren't available afterwards. So I say yes to probably too much stuff. And usually only a few come to fruition for all those other reasons I listed. Sometimes, like what happened to me last month, is everything came out just fine. So now I have like 9 scripts that are due, which is awesome for my wallet, bad for sleep. So like, and you have to do it. And that is the coolest problem I've ever had.
It's a bad, it's one of those things. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah. It's like good for another, bad for one.
Exactly. Like, you know, and that's
like, oh, you want to spend time together this weekend? No,
sorry.
Scripts.
That's the same thing that happens with the cons is like, if I can't take my kids to it, I feel bad because I have to go for work. Like, it's such a good networking opportunity. And sometimes I'm like obligated to go, but like, if I can't take my kids, I'm like, well, that's a whole weekend without hanging out with my daughter, without hanging out with my son. And that stinks. But I get so much extra time with them because I get to stay at home and write.
Yeah.
Like
working from home's, you know, I work from home as well during my day job.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing.
It helps out a lot.
Yeah. You get to go on all the field trips. You get to be right there. I literally walk my kids to school and walk them home. And like when COVID was happening and I was working for home for those automotive companies, but then when I left, COVID was still going on. But it was just like, I just got to spend all of this time with them because I was full-time writing. So you get to hang out with them till they go to sleep. Back then, they slept at a much more reasonable hour. Now they're going to be up till midnight because I'm a bad dad. But at the time, I was really good. And they would go to bed at a reasonable time. And so like, I'm like, they would go to bed, then I would write, and, you know, you just eke out any little time that you can.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. We're going to do our rapid fire question. Well, they're not really rapid fire. Okay. They're just fun.
Let's
questions.
See if we keep them rapid.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before that, can I ask you one question?
Sure.
40 questions, Annika. You're my favorite person. You're going to hook me up with.
Yay.
Like, you can ask me whatever you want.
Yay. Okay.
I'm going to have to send this to before we do the episode. Like,
he's bribing
me. Can I release
me?
This before?
He's going to be like, PR who guy. Is this dude? Oh, my God. Sorry. Go ahead, though.
So who is your favorite cover artist? I just want to know.
My favorite cover artist? That puts me in a tough spot.
Great question, though.
It is so great. I mean, I love so many, and it changes day to day. I got to go to either Scotty Young, because that was my favorite. That's when I got into variant covers. I love everything that he's ever drawn. I buy all of his artwork. So Scotty Young, Jorge Corona, and Dan Mora is probably another one. Annie Wu. It, like everything that she's ever drawn, interiors, covers, doesn't matter. And honestly, the same can be said for Jorge and Dan Mora and Scotty Young as well. I love everything that they do, period. But their covers, because they do more covers than they do interiors, because you can do a lot more covers than you can interiors. One page versus 25, you know. So one of those four would probably be it, unless you ask me next month. And then it might be, you know, Brubaker, Phillips, you know, exactly. I have a signed Jeff Lemire somewhere in here. I love every comic book I've ever read. Even if it's terrible, I can find something in it that I really, really enjoy. So it's kind of hard. If I want the really selfish thing is Sam Gudelin, because he did the cover for The Digger, and it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So it could be that one. But so any of those artists that I said, if you haven't seen them all and stuff, I know you've probably seen Jorge on stuff because he does a lot of things with Scotty Young. So even if you haven't read Middle West, you've probably seen him on like a picture with Scotty Young doing stuff. So you might have passed him in the store. He did Transformers for a while. He had a run on that.
Sweet.
Yeah, well, for Daniel Warren Johnson. So there's that question, Annika. I'm sorry. I could just keep listing artists all day.
Yeah. Well, can I tell you mine?
Yes, please.
Okay.
You have to. That's only fair.
Okay, I will then. Scotty Young again.
There you go.
Yes. Like, it's, like, so amazing. Like, how he does, like, the out, like, the cover and the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's cool, because, like, most publishers you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's all right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
normally it's, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah,
it's very like it's so cool because it's its own style and it's almost so it's like so it's. Yeah,
can I go on a diatribe a little bit about Scotty Young and his style? So, Annika, back in the day, Scotty Young, he's so talented, he could copy almost any artist's style. And there was another artist that I love, Umberto Ramos. He was doing lots of things for Marvel at the time, including Spider-Man and X-Men. And Scotty Young and a lot of artists just wanted to be Umberto Ramos at the time. It's like, I just want to be this guy. The way that he drew Wolverine during Civil War was the coolest thing ever. I want to be like him. So when Scotty Young got hired, he was basically just copying Umberto Ramos' style. So if you see Scotty Young's early stuff, it looked like this other guy's style. And which is well and good. He was getting money. He could have just done his entire career doing that guy's style. And then he got hired to do the Wizard of Oz adaptations for Marvel. And I highly recommend them. If you guys haven't seen them, read them together. They're amazing. They're adaptations of the original Emerald City books. So like the three first novels. And I think they even did some of the other ones. And it's almost word for word. But then Scotty Young did the adaptation of the art. And that's where that iconic Scotty Young style came from. Is he said, I want to draw this different. Is it okay if I try something? And Marvel was super gung-ho. They said, please do. And that's where he found his own personal style was in that book. And that's when you get I Hate Fairyland from. That came afterwards. Yeah. So, like, that's his little journey there. And it's magical to see. Like, I watched it in real time. It was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
That is
I also like David Nakayama.
Oh, so good. That was a drop right there. Like I was expecting like Daniel Warren Johnson or something or any number of awesome people who have drawn Harley Quinn over the years, but that is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to buy every David cover. And
you're going to go broke. He's getting a lot of work right now.
Yeah,
he's doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, he every month, every Harley issue that comes out, he does one. So
he's also done some Poison Ivy.
Yep,
they're so pretty.
I have one of those as a pinup somewhere. I don't have all of my artwork yet because I just moved. But I have that Poison Ivy one because it's so awesome. I have an Annie Wu for because she did Black Canary. I'm just looking around now. I'm like, oh, I have artwork there and there.
Yeah, we don't have a whole lot. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Well, as you like, as you've only been comic book fans for a few years now, right? Like, it's it starts slow.
Well, I mean, really,
just like half a year.
Yeah.
Like, it started on my birthday.
December will be a year.
That's so cool, though. Like, you're on that journey. When I was your age, not to, like, that's the oldest sentence you can say is when I was your age. But when I was your age, I lived in the woods. There was no comic book shops around.
Yeah,
right. So if I wanted comic books, I got Archie. That was the only thing that was available.
Archie?
Which is Archie.
She's discovered Archie.
Archie is so good. You should, if you haven't yet, you should read the Archie reboot that happened with Fiona Staples as the artist. I can't remember who wrote it. It might have been Mark Waid. But Fiona Staples drew it. Go look it up. It's amazing. It's a great run. There's like four volumes of it. It's perfect. Very age appropriate, but also just awesome. I love Archie.
She has
so much
some Harley Betty Veronica.
Yeah, I have the entire. The entire series.
Oh, I love it so much. Like, that was one of my favorites growing up because all I had was Archie comics. So I really fell in love with those. But yeah, when I was 10, I was just reading Archie, and then occasionally someone would get me like a Spider-Man or Death of Superman was my first comic book ever, and that's a weird one because that ties into a very like religious thing. I got that for Easter, and I think it's because he gets resurrected, which was a weird way to try to get me into a religious
religion,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, it didn't work. Okay. Got me into Superman though. He had a black costume
and
a mullet,
and then when I was a kid, it was like. Like you said, Archie or like Sunday paper was
exactly
the
you get peanuts,
comic section. Yeah, that's how I got introduced to it.
So did you like Garfield as a kid?
Oh yeah, Garfield.
That was mine in the Sunday paper.
I can't remember half of them. The Sergeant one.
Beto Bailey.
Yeah. Yeah, there were so many good ones. Family Circus. I love that one.
Love Family Circus.
But then I did get like some Turtles comics. In books and stuff.
Those were always amazing, but also scary because I had the cartoon and then you pick up the Mirage comic and they're like beheading ninjas. And I was like, oh, this is so different, Mom. I don't know if you got the right one. They're normally so fun and eating pizza, but they killed that guy. Are you sure? This is the same guy.
It's okay. I haven't read the last Ronin book. Yeah, I've got it here. I just haven't
got it. It's so good.
It
single-handedly saved IDW. I think they sell about 1 million copies every 3 minutes. It's fantastic.
Yeah, 2 minutes, 55 seconds.
Right.
Like official number.
I think I own 3 copies of it. They've squeezed me for. They put out a black and white copy, and I'm like, yeah, I better, you know?
Right.
You know, just in case, so I have it, you know, because that'll save you someday, is having a black and white copy of The Last Ronin. But that's the logic of a comic book reader.
Do you have any other questions, Annika?
Yeah, hit me.
Or do you want me to go over these fun ones?
I don't really know right now.
Well, those were great
well, if
questions,
you do,
Annika. Thank you.
If you do, we'll catch it at the end.
Okay.
All right, so who was your first favorite superhero or comic character that you like?
So it was a tie between Spider-Man, because Spider-Man was my first and still is my favorite, and the black-suited Spider-Man with the giant mullet and the giant gun, because I thought that's what Superman was. And then when I found out that wasn't what Superman was, it was the Punisher.
Yeah, the Punisher's awesome. So I think you already said this, but the first comic book you ever read, that was Spider-Man?
It was the death
Archie?
Of...
Archie.
No, those are the ones I could buy. The first comic book I ever read was The Death of Superman.
Superman.
Because I got it for Easter, and I don't know why. I had never seen Superman before. I never heard of him. I think I had the Fleischman like cartoon somewhere in my house on tape.
Yeah.
But I was not a Superman guy. But for some reason, my mom made it... My Easter basket that year was Superman themed. So it was the black suited Superman with his mullet and his giant gun fighting Doomsday because he had just been resurrected. Again, I think there was something Jesus-y in there about the resurrection.
Probably.
But I don't know. It was the really weird thing because for that to be your first Superman comic, you're like, oh, he died. Okay, I guess he can't be that good. And he came back to life and he has a giant gun. Cool. All right. Comics seem fun. And then Superman gets really weird from there. But yeah, that was my first foray and I haven't gone back since.
That's awesome. What's your favorite current series?
Ooh, that is a big question. So I probably
know because you write like five of them.
Exactly. I love so many books. The easy answer are things like Saga, Transformers. They're always changing the game. Saga comes out so rarely, but every time it does, it's the best thing I've ever read. I love Brian K. Vaughan. Transformers and everything from the Energon universe is the coolest microcosm of, hey, we want to do this shared universe, but instead of making you read 50 issues of a book, what if we just put out 3 every month and you can just read those and you can get everything you get out of Marvel or DC out of the stuff that you loved in the 80s, G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Void Rivals, which is a new IP. So I love those. Everything in the massive universe, Radiant Black, and everything from that shared universe is always a perfect bet for me. When it comes to the big two, Marvel, DC, Ultimate Spider-Man, Jonathan Hickman, killed it on that. Such a cool reinvention of it. Everything from the Absolute line, but especially Absolute Wonder Woman. The Absolute line was such a cool reinvention because when they said they were going to reboot Batman, you're like, I've seen every reboot of Batman. What are you going to do? And they're like, he's poor this time. And I'm like, ah, I've seen poor Batman. That's not that cool. And when I learned that it was just more, like if we could say bigger every single time someone said, what about this? And they said bigger, that is Absolute Batman. That is Absolute Wonder Woman.
It is so good.
It is
I'm reading the Batman and the Wonder Woman. I started a couple of the others.
Martian Manhunter, Flash.
The Manhunter and Flash and Green Lantern. But by far, the Wonder Woman and Batman are my favorite.
I mean, they're just so cool.
The latest issue of Batman was just crazy.
We don't want to spoil it for anybody. But
right.
They're not surprising me necessarily. Like they built up towards this so far. Like you kind of knew it was coming. But they just do it even harder every single time where it's like, well, okay, so if his chest piece is an axe, that's cool. I get it. I see what they're going for. No, now his Batmobile is a skyscraper. It's just a building that he runs over people with. I'm like, they just keep going bigger with it and more excessive. And that's the entire universe. And I love that as a pitch.
It's really cool.
It's so fun. But yeah, so those are like always the big ones. The problem is I read everything, so I could keep listing. I could list every Power Rangers title that they put out every month from Boom. And those are just the single issue copies that I buy. That doesn't include.
Do you read the new Dick Tracy series?
I fucking love
it. I love it. It is so good.
It's so good. But like, again, we're kids, right? Like Dick Tracy was the thing. Like my mom got me comics.
That was my first superhero movie, right?
Exactly. She loved Dick Tracy. I saw that movie way sooner than I should. And I don't know who any of these people are. I don't care. I watched that and The Shadow and The Phantom and all these old movies. Yep. And so I fell in love with those characters. And so when they were bringing back Dick Tracy, like I bought it for me and my mom. Like, I was like, look at this. This is so cool. And so she reads that, and she also reads all of the Brubaker and Phillips graphic novels with me. I don't know if you've read those. If you like crime thrillers, but like really contained, like it's like a really good noir, like movie, basically. So their Reckless series is what I would recommend. If you ever liked an episode of CSI or Kojak is probably a better representation of it. Any of those older, like detective stories. They're really good. And so I read it with my mom because the only thing she watches is Law and Order and NCIS. And then she reads
it's like being in my mom's house.
Exactly. That's all they watch, man. Like
NCIS. We went to a convention weeks ago. And there's this guy there that has this, you know, this actor. I can't remember his name. But he had this on his poster. He had like NCIS. And so I went up to him. I'm like, you got anything on your table from NCIS? I buy it for my mom right now. And she's like, yeah, I don't have anything for that. I'm like,
wonder why.
Was he in NCIS?
No clue. Yeah, I can't remember. He didn't have anything on the table for that.
They do just as many episodes as Power Rangers used to do back in the day. They do 40 episodes per year. Like, I can't keep track of all that.
I was probably on an episode and don't even know it, you know?
Yeah, you were in Dead Body. Just like Law and Order. Anybody who's anybody died in Law and Order. Like, that's just your claim to fame. Or you were the killer, one of the two.
All right, so if you could live in any comic book universe, which one would you live in?
Oh, like for coolness factor, Marvel. That's the world, right? I can get bit by a radioactive spider. I could go work for AIM. I could be somebody, you know? If nothing else, I could put on a really bad domino mask and fight somebody in Hell's Kitchen. Because apparently in Marvel Comics, Hell's Kitchen, even though it's just a few blocks in real life, it's 45 square miles of just pure crime. And like, so like I could go do that. However, for safety reasons, because I'm just a fragile little comic book, book writer, I would probably want to live something in like Stillwater, which is, you know, one of my favorite Starsky pieces, because you can't die there. And I'm afraid of doing that. So even though it comes with lots of bad things with that, I know I'd be safe there.
That's a good answer. I like that. So what about your superpower? What superpower would you have?
Oh man, when I was a kid, because I had some trauma, as you heard me living in a van, right? It was always time travel. I always wanted to be able to Marty McFly this thing and like change what was going on. And then the second I had kids, I never wanted to change a single moment of my past, because I never wanted to jeopardize something happening that I didn't end up with my children, because they're my world, right? So after that, it was always like, just purely copy Spider-Man. I want Spider-Man powers. I want to be able to swing without my back hurting. I'm a skateboarder, and I cannot skateboard the same way I used to. I'm going to tell you that right now. I went for a ride yesterday, and I'm sitting very firmly on this chair because I can't do anything else today. So if I could have that recovery powers of Spider-Man, it would be wonderful. Or Nightcrawler, because that's the coolest thing that's ever been drawn, is him bamfing everywhere. I'd love if it didn't smell like sulfur like it does when he does it, but...
Yeah, but I love... Yeah, Nightcrawler is awesome.
Bamf.
Exactly.
All right. So if you could have any comic book character as your sidekick, which one would you choose? It could be a main character.
As my sidekick?
As your sidekick.
That's rough. So I think it's Batman or Superman. Because they are each other's sidekicks. I've always loved when Batman and Superman are written as friends, and it hurts my heart when they're not written as
friends. When they're fighting.
Exactly. Correct. Or just like they're not allowed, they're too brooding, right? That was, people talk a lot of smack about Tom King, but when he first took over writing Batman, he wrote this two-issue arc where Batman is engaged and he hasn't told Superman about it, and it's just an issue about Batman talking to Catwoman about why he hasn't told Superman, and Superman telling Lois Lane why he hasn't called to congratulate Batman. And they're best friends, and they're too masculine to talk about it, and their girlfriends go, hey, you're being dumb, talk to your friend. And I want that. I have some my best friends in the world. They're my brothers. And we have those moments where like, hey, why didn't we talk about this thing? And so when I see that, like, I would love to have that also, because Bruce Wayne is a billionaire, and that's a good friend to have. And Superman will come whenever you need him to. And when Batman just says, I don't know if you've ever seen Up, Up and Away. Have you ever read that book? Again, Tom King, I love him.
I'm in the middle of the Batman White Knight series book right now. It's so good.
That is probably the best drawn book I've ever seen. I love everything that Sean Murphy does.
And there's two Harley Quinns in it. Like, what the heck's going on?
And they have a spinoff series later on. I don't want to spoil stuff that involves their family member. But anyways, so I love Sean Murphy. He's an artist that I didn't list before, Annika. Everything about him. But yeah, so at one point, Batman needs Superman, and he knows that Superman is such a good friend and sidekick. If you read World's Finest, they are a team. They're each other's sidekick. That he just says, Clark, I need you. And Superman shows up because he's always listening. So one of those two as my sidekick would be amazing, because they could also do all of the work like a good sidekick does.
Right. And protect me. Fragile me, you know. So.
Yeah. You're fragile with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is the last one. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
It would be T.S. Luther Has Screwed Up Another Thing. Because my whole life is just a series of things that I have messed up that have led me to this point. Or either that, or I just need a win, because it's always something small. I'm like, oh, my car broke down today. I had to drop it off at a shop. My roommate's car broke down, so they couldn't give me a ride to the shop. So we're just walking together, sadly, like Charlie Brown in the rain from this maintenance shop as we drop off our car. And then they called and said, hey, we actually don't do transmissions at this shop. You have to take it to another. So we're just pushing awkwardly our cars to this other shop down the road. And that's everything that we do. So we just need these little wins. So I screw up so much stuff that whenever I make a comic book that makes someone smile, that's like the dream. And that's the final page in every book. You watch me screw up everything else in my life, and then I hand somebody a comic on that last page flip and they smile. And that's the best that I can hope for as I screw up everything else.
Right. I can't wait to have that
also
first
good
sale
advice?
Of my comic book.
Heck yeah, man.
Go ahead.
Okay. Also good advice for like how like the step processes on how to like do a comic book that I would enjoy is.
Ooh, we're coming full circle.
Yeah, I know.
Don't leave big cliffhangers. That is the worst nightmare for me.
I don't think he can follow that one.
I know. I write serials, Annika. Like, literally half of my job is to leave a good cliffhanger.
So you buy the next book.
Exactly.
Not big cliffhangers, but small cliffhangers.
So I will tell you this. So I do leave big cliffhangers, but only on the last page. And only if I know I'm going to write another one. In the middle of it, I write little cliffhangers on every single page to get you to flip to the next one.
Yes.
So I will always do that, but I will definitely not listen to that advice because I need you to buy the next issue. So when I send you these books, I need you to go, oh, I want to know what happens next, you know?
No. Okay. That wasn't like the concept that I was going for.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay.
You got to go slow. Like, I'm old. I'm going to misunderstand.
If you don't know that you are going to write another one, like the company that you're working with hasn't like.
So you're like, saying at the end of the series, don't leave a cliffhanger at the end of the series.
Yes, like Demon Slayer did.
Oh.
God, I hate it.
So that's totally fair, but we don't always have a choice in that, Annika, because true. So a good example. So I said that The Digger is 4 issues, right? I knew I could sell 4 issues. But I could probably have made the story longer. I probably could have put more out there. But I knew that The Digger was probably only going to sell to a company for 4 issues. Sometimes, say like you're working for Marvel, and they come to you, an editor comes to you and says, hey, we're going to give you a chance. You're going to write Spider-Man. And you go, oh, awesome. How long do I get to do it? They're like, well, we're going to give you 7 issues. But if it sells well, maybe you'll get 9. So you're writing a 9-issue series. You know going in, you're like, I'm getting 9 issues. And then nobody buys issue 1. They're not going to come to you and go, it's okay, buddy. It's fine. You're going to write all 9 issues of Spider-Man. We're so excited for you. They're going to go, listen, you tried. We're going to wrap it up at 4, maybe 3 if 2 is really soft on sales. So try to figure it out. But you already wrote issues 1 through 3, and there's a huge cliffhanger in issue 3. And you go, well, I'm going to leave the cliffhanger because they're going to hire somebody else to write Spider-Man. I already talked to him. He's a cool guy. He's a friend of mine. He's excited to write Spider-Man. He's going to do right by me. He's going to finish my cliffhanger for me. And then that guy goes, forget it. I know you killed Daredevil in issue 3, but I'm bringing him back in issue 4. Ha ha.
Exactly.
Me as a writer, I don't have a lot of control over that. So while that's good advice and I would appreciate that as a fan, I've read so many comics where I go, so they're just dropping that storyline altogether, huh? Okay, sure. Spider-Man never had a son, never had a daughter. It's fine. Mary Jane wasn't pregnant. Forget about it.
So maybe you can have that. You can follow that advice in like your publishing company.
I will 100% take it into account into my publishing. And I will tell you this right now. I leave a lot of my books on a cliffhanger and I always plan to do another issue. So Helen and Bash is a great example. Issue 2 ends on a little bit of a cliffhanger. I won't say what it is in case you ever read it. But issue 2 ends on a cliffhanger. And we're not doing issue 3 right now. The company that I work for, Professional Entropy, said, hey, we're going to go back to Hellion and Bash eventually, but we're going to double down on Tokyo Fire right now. It's a little bit better in the industry. We can't afford to have 2 T.S. Luther books going at the same time. We're going to pay for Tokyo Fire. We'll come back to Hellion and Bash later on in 2026. So there's a big cliffhanger in issue 2, and you're going to have to wait to get issue 3 for a little while. I don't have a lot of say in that matter. I can't really fix that, but know that there is something that is coming eventually in issue 3 that I want to tell people about, and we'll get there eventually, and I will write it eventually. But sometimes, because we live in a society that's surrounded by money, and money makes it work and makes all the gears go, and I don't have any because I write comic books, I am a little bit at the behest of the people with the money. And they kind of get to make the decisions. And if someone tells me I get to write Spider-Man, I'm going to do whatever they tell me they do. If they say, write a cliffhanger in issue 2 and then forget about it in issue 3, Annika, I'm sorry. I'm going to listen. I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep writing Spider-Man. I mean, you're fair awesome enough. And you got me to meet. So I'm always going to be grateful for that. But I got to do what Marvel tells me to do because I want to keep writing Spider-Man.
Yeah, so, Marvel's kind of better than me, but...
No, I would never say that, but they might write bigger checks than you, Annika. I don't know. Like,
they write
we'll
bigger
see.
Checks at right. the moment.
Exactly. So sometimes you got to go with the money. At the moment.
Podcast will take off, and we'll hire
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but
to
the
do
thing
something.
Is...
Thank you. Please keep me in mind for your next book. This is the thing that I tell people. Say yes to every gig, even if they don't exist yet. AJ, when your book gets bigger than any book I've ever written, please hire me for a backup. I'll do two pages. Sure. Well, a very reasonable page rate. We'll work for food. You know, like... Well, you know, we can get this made. Annika very clearly has an editor's brain. Like, she knows what she wants from a book.
Yeah.
She's going places. So when you get it to Boom or Dark Horse or to Marvel or DC, please remember that I sent you stickers and hire me.
Okay.
You know, that's interesting because watching your videos and, you know, having this conversation and stuff, it's like, I don't even like think about my comic going pitched anywhere else or trying to pitch it anywhere. Like, I don't need that. I mean, it'd be cool, but I'm glad that I can do this without like that being like
the
driving
goal, right?
force.
Yeah.
Or like, the end goal. Like, I'm only doing this so somebody will recognize me. I'm like, somebody does, they do. Like, it's
right.
Getting old. You know, I don't lower expectations, right? I guess is the best way to put it.
But also, you know what you want out of your book. So that's a great example. Yep. I've mentioned my buddies over at Lucky 33. They do new luminaries.
Mm-hmm.
They could be way bigger than me. They could be working for publishers. They've made enough books. They have a good enough brand. But that's not what they want. They just want to make books with their friends from high school. That's their only goal, and to keep it fun. If they had to do it for somebody else, it wouldn't be fun anymore. So
when it becomes corporate, it's not fun anymore.
Right. And so for me, like, my goal isn't just to have fun making books. My goal is to write comic books until I die. And
I do want to eat, though.
Exactly. And I have kids, so I have to feed them. And I was dumb. Like I said, I quit my job, so I have to make it work. So for me, there's that. I have to put food on the table, so I got to keep getting these bigger gigs. But also, I want to keep doing this for as long as possible, and I know the best way for longevity is to get hired by bigger and badder companies every single time. And because that's my goal, I do say yes to everything. I do want my books to sell. I do put my heart and soul into every single book, so I want them to do well, and that's more of the goal. I want to write a good book. It doesn't have to make me famous. It doesn't have to make a lot of money. In fact, I guarantee it won't make me famous, and I've never made a lot of money doing anything. So, like, I know that it's not going to do that, but it might get me another at-bat, and that's always my goal, is did I sell enough copies for the gatekeepers, for the money people, to give me another chance? And if not for them, for another place. Did enough people see it that somebody who can make decisions give me another shot? And that's always my goal. For you, like, if you're not trying to work for Marvel and DC, that's still an important book. That still is just as good as anything that I'm doing. It just means that you're going to be happier at the end of the day when you finish that book, and you don't have to go, well, now I got to make four more. It's Tuesday. I got to be ready.
Well, I already got issue two on my mind. So,
that's good, though.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But that's for the love of the game, man. That's the awesome.
It's going to be it's bad, though, because issue one is I consider it a one shot, basically.
Oh, okay.
It's not like a continued series, but issue two is actually going to be probably should be issue zero because it's going to be the origin story.
That happens sometimes. So, and you might decide, you might go, hey, actually, this isn't issue two. This is issue zero. And then you jump on to like doing it as you go. But here's the thing. You don't have an editor. You don't have a gatekeeper. You don't have any bosses. You can do whatever the heck you want to do with it. It can be issue zero.
Right.
You can mark it as issue four, and people go, what the hell? Like, full New Hope, this thing.
That would be, damn it.
And that's why I make the aggressively medium bucks right there.
Right?
But that's like, amazing. You know, you don't have a boss. You can do whatever you want as long as it's your vision and you love it and you can afford to do it. That's always a caveat. But if you can make this book, make it the most you book you can, man, because it's your dream.
And I don't have to, you know, I don't need to make millions of dollars. I just need to make enough to eat.
I would say even if you did have to make $1 million, you shouldn't be making a comic book. Because they don't make
how to
millions.
Make $1 million in the comic book industry. Start with $1 billion.
If I wanted to call a comic book something, I'd say you're going to make tens of dollars, man. Like right. You're going to roll in those tens.
Rolls those singles.
That one single 10 that you got one time because yep. that guy felt bad for you because you kept asking him convention. To buy your book.
Yep. I need to feed my kid lunch.
Can I tell people that all the time. Like, listen, if you want to do anything, if nothing I said sounds cool to you, that's okay. Feed my children because if you don't buy this book, they starve because I'm a terrible dad. So buy this book. Otherwise, they're never going to make it.
It's okay. We got ramen noodles.
Well, listen, ramen noodles aren't cheap. They cost tens of dollars, Hanukkah. Okay.
Right.
30 cents.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I love ramen noodles.
They ain't five for a dollar anymore. Jesus.
They want toppings in them. They say, Dad, we're getting scurvy because you haven't bought oranges. Like, you know, you gotta feed them every day. They don't tell you that when you go to school. You have kids. Yeah. You got to feed them every day.
Every day. They come up to me like, we need food. I'm like, didn't I feed you yesterday?
Fed you yesterday. I bought you clothes last year. What do you mean you need new shoes? Use the same shoes. They don't fit. Have smaller feet. I don't know what you want me to tell you, kid. God, you know what? We're going Flintstones this year. I'm cutting a hole in the bottom. You don't even have to worry about shoes.
That's right.
Please
well,
don't do
dude,
that.
This was awesome. I probably do need to wrap it up. It's almost 8:30.
It is. Thank you so much for having me. Also, disclaimer, I promise I buy my kids shoes and food.
Good.
You can see my kids wearing clothes.
I have clothes. I got official merch.
It might be official merch clothing.
I know she has a Captain America shirt. She's taken care of.
Yep, exactly.
I'll wear it in the next podcast.
We can afford Harley comics and stuff. So
are you buying your kids comics?
Always. Buy my kids comics. Okay. No food, but I'm buying them comics. They can chew on the edges.
Okay, they can just eat the paper.
That's right. There's so much protein in there. It comes from trees.
Exactly.
Oh.
In a world of heroes, villains, and epic stories,
Braha, Anakon, and their ultimate sidekick, Panel P, take you on adventures each week.
Showing off their comic book hauls,
fun trivia and games, honest reviews,
and inspiring conversations with the creators and consumers who make it all possible.
Join in on the conversation.
This is Talking Comics.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.